Seaside is locally owned and operated by Mike Brooks and Tracy Polacco. Tracy is a factory-trained Volvo service advisor. Mike is a factory-trained and certified Volvo technician with over 17 years of experience servicing and repairing Volvos. Join the many Monterey Bay Volvo owners who only trust Hans Auto Repair to service their Volvos. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside. Call Hans at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Israel said today it'll take several more weeks to end military activity in Lebanon, and it's already proving costly.
I'm Dan Raviv in Tel Aviv, where the Israeli army now confirms that 8 soldiers died in Bint Jebel, a Shiite Muslim village in southern Lebanon known to be a Hezbollah stronghold. This a full day after Israel declared it captured that town. And in another village reportedly captured late last week, another ambush killed an Israeli army officer.
A new CBS News New York Times poll ranges widely across the landscape of war and politics.
75% say that the Bush administration should take its allies' views into account in its foreign policy. That's not what Americans think the administration is doing, however. Just 29% believe that the administration does take the views of its allies into account.
Poll director Kathleen Frankovic says most Americans want a timetable for withdrawing troops, but not if it means insurgents get to win in Iraq. A Houston jury finds Andrea Yates not guilty of murder, insanity, in the killings of her 5 children.
I'm really proud of the jury.
That's Rusty Yates, Andrea's former husband. CBS's Steve Futterman was at the courthouse.
To the end, prosecutors argued that despite her problems, Andrea Yates failed to meet the Texas definition of insanity. Defense attorneys say the verdict is a watershed event in the treatment of mental illness. Yates will be sent now to a maximum security mental hospital, which is encircled by a 17-foot fence and has guard towers.
17-year-old Zach Blanton charged with sniper shooting 2 people. Killing one on Indiana's highways, appeared in court today. He pleaded not guilty. The chairman of the U.S. Olympic Committee says we are still in it with 3 cities for the 2016 Games.
The following cities were selected to move forward to the next level. They are Chicago, Los Angeles, and San Francisco.
That's the USOC chairman, Peter Uberoff. If you want to be here, you got to pay $10 an hour plus benefits worth another 3. That's the deal in Chicago. City council members have passed the living wage rule for big box retailers, companies like Walmart, tops in mind. It's hot.
I see milk in the stores going up.
So hot in California, it's even costing more to produce the milk.
If you take water and to turn it into a mist and then with fans spray it around in the corrals, then that helps keep them cool. But there's a point where that doesn't do much because of the humidity.
Roy Isom at KMJ in Fresno says hundreds of dairy cows have died from the heat. Great time of year for the Santa Claus convention. It's underway in Denmark. 171 Santas from Europe, the United States, and Japan in their red suits, bellies like jelly, whiskers and all. In 90-degree heat, topmost topic, how to stay jolly. On Wall Street, the Dow down a point, NASDAQ off 3. This is CBS News.
Because financial solutions have no borders or boundaries, because one market affects another market, UBS operates in only 2 locations, everywhere and right next to you. Powerful global resources leveraged every day to the most important issues. Yours. UBS, leader in wealth management, global asset management, and investment banking, and committed to a relationship we call you and us. Member SIPC.
CompUSA email bank.
Steve emails, Dear CompUSA, got any killer back-to-school deals? Steve, we've got hundreds of killer deals, including $300 off a Toshiba laptop with Intel Core Duo Processor and Microsoft Media Center Edition. $300 off! That puts it under $700 after savings and rebate. Our lowest price ever. This and other great deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA's back-to-school sale. We got it? We get it. See store for details.
Ever wondered how much the big boss really makes? Before long, you should be able to look it up if the company's big enough.
Come next year, it should be easier for shareholders of public companies and the public to figure out just what kind of money and other benefits such companies pay their top executives. The Securities and Exchange Commission is putting new disclosure rules in place before the 2006 annual reports come out. They're supposed to spell out total compensation to CEOs, chief financial officers, and the next three top paid execs, spelled out in plain English. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
Women used to throw their unmentionables at him and the rest of boy banders NSYNC. They evidently landed with a thud for Lance Bass, who has confirmed the rumors and has outed himself. Says he's gay, has a boyfriend. Says he didn't say anything before now because he had the careers of his bandmates in his hand. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Yeah, my truck doesn't have coverage, but if my boat hit it, will my boat policy pay for the damage to my truck?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical.
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, she will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
Why do I like working for Verizon Wireless? For one thing, I love the challenge of managing new projects every day, all designed to make our network stronger and more efficient, and making sure we reach every milestone. But also, I love the flexibility. Whether I need training to learn a new skill or time to spend with my family, Verizon Wireless works as hard for me as I work for my customers. I'm Marlene Chua, Senior Technical Analyst. Our people, our network, Verizon Wireless. We never stop working for you.
Let's do it.
Peter B. Collins.
It's another edition of the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm your humble host, Peter B. We got 3 hours to talk, and talk a little more about the issues that concern us the most. This is the Progressive Talk Show. I'm glad you found us wherever you happen to be listening. Monterey, Eureka, Sacramento, or Phoenix, Arizona. Everybody's welcome here at the Peter B. Collins Show. We've got a brand new toll-free number, and you're invited to use it. It's 888-5-PETER-B. Isn't that easy? Yeah, we had a team work for days to come up with that number. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372 if you prefer the digits. Coming up later this hour, we're going to meet Ken Walton. He was indicted for eBay fraud, if you can imagine that. He made a lot of money selling art on eBay. He's going to tell the story that is recounted in his book called Fake, subtitled Forgery, Lies, and eBay. And, of course, on the Internet, we're all better looking, 10 years younger. And lousy paintings can pass for fine art, particularly at eBay. Next hour, we're going to meet Paul Leto. He is an elections attorney, a specialist who has been retained by the people who are challenging the District 50 special election for the candidate to replace Duke Cunningham, who's in the slammer. That occurred on June 6th in San Diego. And if you listen to this program, you know that there are serious doubts about the security and integrity of that election. And Paul Leto is an attorney from Washington State who was active in the post-election legal activities after the governor's race there, which the initial tally produced a result separated by 47 votes, if I remember correctly. So he'll be joining us next hour. Our daily update on the Middle East from Chris Tonsing of the Middle East Report will return tomorrow. He had a conflict and couldn't join us today. We're also going to meet Mark Osterloh, who is the millionaire. He's a doctor and a lawyer from Arizona who is floating a ballot measure to reward a voter, just a single voter, with $1 million next Election Day. And we discussed this on the program last week. I understand his goal. I worry about the morons and the mooches who will show up at the polls simply to try to win $1 million. And I remind people of how we got Jesse Ventura as the governor of Minnesota. Also on today's show, Mike Farrell is going to join us. You remember him from the MASH TV show? He is an activist who is opposed to capital punishment, and he's co-founder of an organization called Death Penalty Focus. And often we talk to Mike when there is a pending execution here in California. Executions are currently banned because of legal wrangling over the constitutionality of the lethal injection process. And so it's a rare opportunity to talk to Mike Farrell when there isn't an execution imminent, and he'll be joining us in our third hour today, and he's going to talk about an open letter that he has written to Jerry Brown, who will probably be the next Attorney General of California. And Brown is personally opposed to the death penalty, but says he will execute the law, if you pardon that choice of word, if he is successful in his quest to stay in political office. So we'll talk about all that and take your phone calls, too, here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Again, my new number, 888-5-PETER-B. Go ahead and jot it down or program it into that fancy phone that you really don't know how to operate. Ari Melber joins us to kick off the program today. He writes for The Nation, and he posted a pretty interesting piece a couple of days ago at thenation.com. Welcome back, Ari. Oh, I think I have you there. Ari, can you hear me? Oh, gosh. Everything was so wonderful here at our new studio setup, and apparently I managed to hang up on Ari. So, Matt, I just cleared that line for you. Go ahead and dial him back, and we'll get him here on the line in just a second. What he wrote about is the interesting role that web people, bloggers, activists, collectively known as the Netroots, the role they have had in the downward spiral of the political fortunes of Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut and the ascendance of a former Republican, Jim Webb, who is the Democratic nominee for the Senate in Virginia, challenging George Allen this November. There's been one debate between Webb and Allen so far, but as Ari has traced in the piece that he wrote that is posted at thenation.com, Netroots had a very interesting role in the development of Jim Webb's campaign. Ari, welcome back to our show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Nice to talk with you again. And I was fascinated by the piece that you wrote because I know a little bit about Jim Webb. I met him in the early 1990s when he was one of the few people speaking out against the original war in the Gulf, the ejection of Iraq from Kuwait. And he was on my radio show a couple of times, and I found him interesting because he was a former Reagan Pentagon official who was challenging a sitting Republican president over a war that was not that controversial with many Americans and not that controversial between the two political parties. So I found him to be a very solid guy, but I lost touch with him, didn't really talk with him, and then saw him resurface as a contender in the primary in Virginia this year. And as you point out in the piece that's at thenation.com, the Netroots, web-based activists, had a lot to do with this. Tell us.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at Virginia, they had one of these situations where the party elites had already selected a candidate who was a prominent business lobbyist with a longtime Democratic credentials named Harris Miller, and everyone was saying, well, this is who's going to run against George Allen, a very popular incumbent, and a lot of people figured he'll probably lose, and that's another election cycle. People know what that feels like. A small group of activists got together and said, number one, they weren't content with Miller. They were looking for someone else, and they'd heard that Jim Webb, who was this Reagan official, was actually, who'd been speaking out against the war, was actually potentially interested in running. Mm-hmm. And they literally contacted him, a guy named Lowell Feld, who runs a blog called Raising Cain in Virginia, contacted Webb. They met with him for several hours. They spent time with him. They talked about issues. They talked about why he'd been an original opponent of the Iraq War. And Webb said he was thinking about it, but wasn't sure that there'd be any support for him on the Democratic side with his Republican history, although he had now switched parties. And so they created a draft website that was locally based, not a national thing, just in Virginia, trying to recruit volunteers and potential donors and supporters to show there was an appetite, and they did in a very short time show a great appetite for Jim Webb, and it was, he says, one of the keys to his decision to enter the race.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, Ari, that really troubled me, I was in Washington in mid-June when the Senate primary and the other primary elections were held in Virginia, and the turnout for that race was under 4% of registered voters. It was 3.44%, and I was stunned by that. I did a little research. It turns out that Virginia has a history of low turnout in primaries, even when you have a situation like George Allen being challenged by a couple of capable Democrats. And in the past, the turnout has been under 20%, but in the range of 15 to 20. But I almost fell out of my chair when I read that in the Washington Post, that turnout was 3.5%.
Yeah, it's very low turnout, and that means that a small group of people can really swing a primary. That can be bad for democracy if it's top-down or certain interests are plowing a lot of money in to shift the race. But what we're seeing with the Internet, and why I would say this is generally positive, is that it also can empower regular people who don't have a lot of money to give or a lot of connections, but who have opinions and ideas, and they can share them in basically a town hall environment on the Internet, and they can swing a race. And they beat the favorite, Harris Miller, who actually had more money and was supposed to be able to take that money in his campaign operation and turn out the small number of people you'd need in a small primary like that. So while I think everyone would like to see better turnout and that sort of a election reform issue as much as a political issue, the Internet here is empowering a new group of people to shift these primaries.
And Ari, on that note, a little bit later today, we're going to talk to Mark Osterloh. He's a former candidate for governor in Arizona. He was the author of their Clean Elections campaign law, and he has a new ballot measure, number 200, which would award $1 million to a single voter in a random drawing selected from all the people who turned out on Election Day. And it is an interesting way to try to get people to vote. I have a number of misgivings that will air out with Mr. Osterloh when he joins us in about an hour and a half. But you're correct that people do need to address the turnout issue. Now, as we continue, I want to talk a little bit more about Jim Webb and also talk about the way the web and Netroots have affected or afflicted Joe Lieberman's efforts to hang on to his seat in Connecticut. And before we go to the break, I just want to read your power close here, Ari. It's really well written and says a lot. The diverging paths of Jim Webb and Joe Lieberman suggest a Netroots strategy that is driven as much by political pragmatism as ideological purity, where the Iraq War is critical but not paramount, and joining the party late is more acceptable than leaving early. That's clever. It also proves that if Netroots Democrats care about one thing more than aggressive partisanship, it's winning. We'll pick up there as we continue with Ari Melber. Your calls and comments are welcome. You can join me toll-free on our new number, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Hi, I'm Dan Brown, president of At Your Service Premier Event Planning and Transportation. We specialize in events ranging from a two-person anniversary or 200 guests attending the great AT&T or the concourse. We have a fleet of sedans, limousines, vans, mini coaches, as well as vintage cars that make any event special. Weddings, wine tours, or corporate events, give us a call, 625-5363, or check us out on the web, MontereyLimos.com.
Do you have a living trust? Lawyers on Duty is offering a living trust package for just $995. If you're single, only $895. Give your loved ones the safety net by saving them thousands of dollars by avoiding cumbersome legal proceedings. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available and affordable. With over 1,000 living trusts completed locally, they'll work with you to avoid costly probate. Behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, downtown Monterey. Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Kia Sedona, a 7-passenger minivan with 3 rows of seats. With a low price and generous warranties, Kia is getting more competitive with Japanese and American car makers. The Sedona has a 3.8-liter fuel-injected six-cylinder engine and a five-speed automatic with average power and acceleration. It passed our grueling hill climb test with no problem. It's roomy inside, and the third seat folds flat for cargo, but wouldn't be comfortable for an all-day trip. My demo has AC and power locks, but it's not loaded with accessories or leather. By the numbers, the 2006 Kia Sedona minivan gets 18 mpg in the city, 25 miles to the gallon on the highway, and stickers in California for about $24,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. And the Peter B. Collins Show continues at 21 minutes past the hour. You can join us with a question or comment toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. We continue now with Ari Melber. He writes for The Nation and posted a piece at thenation.com called Webb, Lieberman, and the Net Roots. Now, Ari, in the version that I printed out from The Nation website, they spelled Webb with only one B.
I think it was a pun.
Okay.
But I've had other people ask the same question. Is it the Webb like the Internet or Jim Webb with two Bs, the Senate candidate?
Right. And, of course, the journalist is not responsible for the headline that's been written by an editor.
So true.
Yeah. Now, interesting to contrast the rising fortunes of Jim Webb, who, as you point out, only recently joined the Democratic Party, and his embrace by grassroots activists, including Webb activists, and the decline of Joe Lieberman, again, largely driven by bloggers and other activists who got behind Ned Lamont when he didn't have a prayer. He was showing less than 15% in the polls just a few months ago. And the Lieberman-Lamont race has really caught fire. Ned Lamont is ahead by about 4 points in the most recent poll. And the Democrats have trotted out their top guns, including Bill Clinton, to try to save the derriere of Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, and it is fascinating because Joe Lieberman, when you read a lot of the top websites, he is criticized as much for his positions, such as a really blind, ridiculous support for the Iraq war at this late stage, and willingness to compromise on Social Security with the president, and a sellout on the Homeland Security Department, and those policies.
Mm-hmm.
He's criticized as much for them for as his overall disloyalty to the Democratic Party. And by that I mean selling out the party, going on conservative media, repeating Republican talking points, being the Fox News Democrat, and attacking the liberal base of the party, undermining activists. Those aren't really complete public policy issues. Those are political issues. They matter in public policy, and we know that. We have an informed base in the Democratic Party that gets it. But they are political issues, and so it's interesting because you contrast that to Jim Webb, who the bloggers have embraced, and there's no way to cut it. Politically, he was a Republican for a very long time. Politically, he savaged Bill Clinton on a number of occasions and was a partisan Republican on a number of things. And yet his very late conversion to the Democratic Party and to and to some of these other values and the way he wants to take out George Allen has won over all these folks who are mad at Lieberman for politics.
Well, and it's interesting because Lieberman very publicly excoriated President Clinton during the Lewinsky scandal, and I'm sure that he would rather get a kiss today from Monica Lewinsky than the photographed kiss that George W. Bush gave him after the State of the Union message.
I think that's about right. That kiss has come to haunt him, and the bloggers built this papier-mâché model of it that was afloat in a parade, and now when President Clinton made his appearance there, I read in the New York Times that the papier-mâché model of the kiss was, you know, making its way around the neighborhood for people to see. That's become the real symbol of this craven,
yeah,
this craven alliance with President Bush, who's ruining this country.
Well, Ari, I want you to know that I've been arguing for a long time now that Lieberman needed to be made an example of, and that if Democrats wanted to establish what the core values of the party are, what loyalty means, that he was the one to target. And I'm pleased that the bloggers picked up on it. I'm pleased that Ned Lamont surfaced with enough money and credibility to challenge a sitting two-term senator, three-term, sorry. And I welcome this internal struggle. What I don't like is progressives like Barbara Boxer putting off her supporters and putting aside her core values to embrace a guy who really is just a member of her club. That's the best alliance that I can see there.
Yeah, and Peter, you hit the nail on the head with this clubby insider attitude about it, and it's bigger than even just the Democratic Party. There has been a backlash among many of the media elites and the folks who write and talk on TV in D.C. about this. You can see them recoiling from it as if Joe Lieberman should never even have to face a primary challenge.
Yeah, he's
as
entitled.
A politician is above going before the voters, and I think that's really important when you look at someone like David Brooks, who a lot of listeners may not take David Brooks seriously, but what he writes still matters. You know, it's in the New York Times, it's in D.C. When he describes this primary challenge as a, quote, liberal inquisition, you know, end
yeah.
quote, that's really offensive. That really shows that not just the Democratic elites who say, oh, an incumbent should keep his seat, but the entire public discourse assumes that politicians shouldn't have to go back before the voters. And I find that really troubling, especially since we have so much to talk about in these upcoming midterms, and we need Democrats who failed, Republicans who failed, new voices. We need all of that out there this November and in the primaries. And it's disturbing to see such a hostility to those kind of races.
Yeah. Also, I think it's interesting to note that Bill Clinton, of course, you know, has the visibility. He is the superstar of the Democratic Party. But he came out here to try to save Gray Davis in California during the final days of the recall and didn't get anywhere. They also dispatched Jesse Jackson. And the day before the election, I interviewed the Reverend. And I asked him, I said, aren't you a little uncomfortable stumping for Gray Davis? After all, he hardly embraces any of your values. And Jesse famously said, Gray Davis, he ain't nothing but a bump on a stump. And I said, pardon me, Reverend Jackson, what did you say? He said, he ain't nothing but a bump on a stump. So he was a little lukewarm about the assignment he had been given. And I have to imagine Bill Clinton is lukewarm about being out there stumping for Joe Lieberman.
Yeah, I mean, I can't read President Clinton's mind. I think he looks like the bigger person, and even after all the petty criticism that Joe Lieberman sent his way, he's going to go out there and stand up and offer his endorsement for an incumbent and someone he says he's known since you know, 70 years back in law school, and that's a relationship. And people understand personal relationships. I think President Clinton comes off looking better than Lieberman, who acted like he was better than the president and above the president for so long, and now, with his back against the wall, is reaching out for that support.
Ari, we got to go. Thanks a lot, Ari Melber. Okay, Read about it at thenation.com. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
In response to rising interest rates, Victor Munoz of Creative Mortgage in Salinas offers the following advice to homeowners with variable rate loans. Don't panic or overreact. If you feel trapped in a frightening squeeze, first analyze your situation calmly, then take the best action available. There are so many types of loans, one is very likely to meet your particular needs. For a free consultation with Victor Munoz at Creative Mortgage, call 757-0436. Let Victor share with you the knowledge that he has built up over many years in the mortgage industry. Call Victor at 757-0436 today.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Parents, do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview nationally known writers, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty news shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Thank you for listening. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Still to come on the program today, attorney Paul Leto is going to join us next hour. He has signed on to the challenge to the results in California's Congressional District 50 that we've been talking about over the past few weeks. Also on the way today, the man who wants to pay $1 million to people just for voting. Well, one voter would win it in a drawing. Mark Osterlo will join us from Phoenix next hour.
What I mean is, let's do the wild ride.
Joining me now is the author of a new book called Fake, subtitled Forgery, Lies, and eBay. Ken Walton joins us from the Sacramento area today. Ken, I'm Peter B. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Peter. It's good to be here.
Well, it's nice to talk with you, and I've read part of your book. I find it fascinating. I also am a guy who's only occasionally dabbled at eBay, so I have a lot of curiosity. And let me start with this. Did you know what a Diebenkorn painting was when you started trading on eBay?
No, I mean, the first time I got on there, I don't know if I'd ever even heard of him, and I certainly didn't know anything about his art.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a culture vulture, so I've been to museums where I've seen Richard Diebenkorn's work. However, I'm not an art expert, and I honestly couldn't tell a forgery from a real Diebenkorn if it were well executed.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get around to that part of the story in a bit, which is what drew a lot of unwanted attention to you and ultimately led to some criminal action placed against you.
Right.
But you got started in eBay after going to visit a friend named Fetterman, one of your old Army buddies.
Right. Fetterman was a guy I'd known years earlier in the Army, and I sort of lost touch with him. And I was just about a year out of law school and pretty much regretting my career choice. I was very bored practicing law. I worked for a big firm in Sacramento.
You make it sound really boring.
In the book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I tried to capture that as accurately as I could.
Tedious. Tedious is what it comes across as.
Yeah. I open the book, and I'm in my 28th floor office, and it just feels like a gilded cage.
Mm-hmm. And so instead of surfing the web for porn, you were surfing the web for eBay.
Yeah, I'd never used eBay before, and I had this old friend from the Army, Fetterman, so he gives me a buzz one day and asks if he can stop by, and he and his girlfriend come over, and I knew that he'd been buying and selling art for years, making his living doing that, but I never thought it was anything I could ever take part in. He'd spent years teaching himself about art, and it was all kind of a mystery to me, and then he showed me how simple it was to do on eBay. And he told me you can just go run to thrift stores and antique shops and buy stuff, and it's cheap, and you can turn it around and make a quick profit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it started out. It was all pretty innocent. And this guy, Fetterman, had hundreds of paintings in his house, and this is stuff he'd collected over the years to sell.
Mm-hmm.
And he just offered to pass some of it off to me to sell for him, because I didn't have time to go shopping all the time I was working. And most of them were ordinary and unimpressive, but every now and then there'd be a sleeper and it would sell for quite a bit.
Your first eBay transaction, what did you buy and what did you sell it for?
My very first transaction, I went out and I bought about seven or eight paintings for less than $100.
At thrift stores, right?
At thrift stores, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
These are just cast-offs, things that people had donated and tossed away. And one of them ended up selling for $355, I believe, was the price. Might have been $400 and something. I'd have to look back.
Yeah.
But this was something I'd paid, like $12 for, and it sold for hundreds.
And it was so easy.
It was so easy. It was kind of a dangerous lesson I learned. I realized after this thing had been purchased, somebody had looked at the signature on it, and they had interpreted that signature as a signature of some French artist that I'd never heard of.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, they just speculated that it might be worth some money, and then they got in a little bidding war, and this is something I had no idea. Fetterman looked at that thing, and he said, that's a piece of junk. And so I learned that people would speculate, and they would assume something might be by a particular artist, even if you don't promise that it is, or even mm-hmm. suggest that it is.
And right. You show in the book that you could put something up and say, Diebenkorn with a question mark? And that way it wasn't an assertion from you that this was a legitimate painting from a known artist, but just by asking the question, you aroused the interest of people who were out there cruising for a painting by a painter they might recognize.
Right. And, you could take that one step further and not even mention the artist at all, but just show a close-up picture of a signature. And that seems to even fan the flames even more.
Yeah.
Because then they really they think that you've never even heard of that artist, yet they're the only person in the world that can spot that signature as that of the artist that they adore. And so it's really back then, and probably still, it was sort of a Wild West world of art speculation on eBay, and I just saw a lot of crazy things happening. And gradually, you know, Fetterman started passing off some of these things to me that sold for a lot of money that I wasn't really representing. And I realized before too long that he was probably faking these things or altering them. And at that point, the money was coming in, and I kept concocting rationalizations for why I wasn't really doing anything that wrong. And justification upon justification, I was kind of like the frog in the proverbial slowly boiling pot of water. And, you know, before I knew it, I was in really deep, and the bubbles were rising around me, and I just, you know, I was able to sort of push any reservations out of my mind, because I was starting to make quite a bit of money.
Ken Walton's first book is about his experience on eBay and how it led him to meet the FBI and get unwanted publicity from the New York Times and many other media outlets. We'll tell that story in the next segment. But Ken, I wanted to talk just a little bit, because, you know, I use the web and I've been to eBay, and I'm not afraid to buy things online. So I'm probably somewhat average in that respect. I would never buy a painting of any kind on eBay. And let me operate in an area that I'm a little more comfortable in. I have shopped and bid on electronic gear on eBay, because I use it for the radio show and for other things that I do. And it's something that I am comfortable buying because I know what I'm looking for, and I know how to look for things that would be deficient in one manner or another. But in every case where I've bid on an electronic item on eBay, the final selling price was so close to the retail price for a brand new factory, you know, in the carton with a warranty unit, that I couldn't imagine taking the chance to buy somebody's secondhand unit, even though the photograph looked good and they represented that they'd only used it for 10 hours to record their grandmother before she died, you know.
Yeah.
I just didn't have enough confidence to go ahead and bid over 80% of the retail price, because I felt at that point, that's not a bargain. But there's a whole psychology about eBay that you appear to have grokked, because as you explain it in the book, there are different kinds of buyers and sellers on eBay. So tell us what a picker is.
Well, a picker is something, it's kind of unique to the art and antique world, although, you know what, there may be people who do the same thing in the electronics world, I don't know, but these are people who are constantly on the lookout for, they're pretty savvy, they know what they're looking for, they're constantly looking for things that they can resell at a profit. And so they're looking for people who are selling things who don't really know the true value of those things, that they can pick up stuff from and turn it around rapidly and make a profit. So these are the kind of people who would go around, see a signature on a painting and be able to look it up or recognize it as that of an artist and want to buy it, and especially want to buy it if the seller doesn't seem to know what that signature means.
And sometimes you could play dumb, and that would actually make somebody think that they were able to take advantage of you.
Yeah, I call that the naive seller strategy, and that was what I used quite a bit. And it seemed to soothe my conscience, because I wasn't sort of outright lying to these people to induce them to buy. I was just kind of playing dumb. And it definitely encouraged these types of people who go around looking for these unbelievable bargains to take advantage of the sellers. And, you know, I saw it kind of as a big game. Like they were sort of motivated by their own greed, trying to get unbelievable bargains to make profits, you know, and resell. And so I was just kind of like playing into their whole game and getting them back in a way.
And Fetterman seemed to model that behavior for you. You talked about a buying trip, I guess, up to Reading. And he went into this place and started talking like a hick, saying, I like that picture up there on the wall. Are you willing to sell it? And by acting unsophisticated, he was able to, get the price cut in half.
Yeah, he never wanted to appear very sophisticated when he was out buying art, because he thought if he came across as an art dealer that somebody at the store that was selling the piece might think that they were going to be taken advantage of. So he always pretended like he had no idea what he was buying, and he just liked how it looked. And, you know, people in turn would use that same strategy with me on eBay, and they would I would ask them why they paid so much for what I was selling, and a lot of times they wouldn't even tell me.
Yeah.
They would just say I liked how it looked, and then sometimes later on, if it it wasn't by the particular artist that they'd hoped, they would come back later complaining about it.
All right, the next eBay archetype is the compulsive collector.
Right. And these are people, this is just sort of the bread and butter customer.
I've got 14 bobbleheads and I've got to get the other six.
Exactly. They just can't stop buying things on eBay. And they're not necessarily looking for unbelievable bargains. You know, these are the people who might just pay, they might pay, you know, 85-90% of retail just because they love to shop on eBay and they can't stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, you shop in a market that you know very well. So you know that these things are not bargains, but people have this notion that everything on eBay is a bargain. So.
Yeah, they do get caught up in it, don't they?
Yeah, it's very much like a fever, mm-hmm. like an addiction, you know.
And is it gambling? Or is it similar to gambling? I mean, is it that kind of thrill where unless you've taken the risk, you don't get the same pleasure from the reward?
I think for a lot of people, they go through the same sort of emotional rush, the high and the low and the thrill when they push that button. It's the same way as pushing chips out onto the table.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is true. I got those types of rushes when I was selling things, you know, and you'd never know how much it was going to sell for. And you'd push it out there and you'd hope for the best, and sometimes mm-hmm. it would sell for a lot. And it was just like, you know, winning the right number on the roulette wheel.
Mm-hmm. Then you described the academic, kind of a professional type. I think people understand that. What about the wealthy dilettante?
Well, these were people who kind of maybe had a dabbling knowledge of art and a lot of time and money on their hands. You know, maybe, you know, retired people who had quite a bit of money in the bank, trust fund baby types, and they would get on eBay and they sort of relished the adventure
mm-hmm.
of bidding on these unguaranteed pieces of art. And they weren't nearly as savvy or, you know, they were really more likely to be fooled than art professionals. And since they had so much money to spend, they were often the high bidders. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. And finally, what's a slummer?
Slummer is probably some of the most savvy customer who's probably unlikely to be fooled. He's like a real-world art-dealing professional who just kind of slums on eBay.
Maybe somebody who recently left the employ of the Getty Museum?
Perhaps that person is out there on eBay.
I'm looking for some Italian antiquities that I can keep forever.
Yeah, that would be a classic example of a slummer who may be spending a little time on eBay, but probably is not going to be fooled.
Time for a break. We'll continue in a moment with Kenneth Walton. You can visit his website, kennethwalton.com. Find out more information about the book, Fake, Forgery, Lies, and eBay. And just a quick question, could I buy your book on eBay?
I believe there are sellers out there. I'm not selling any copies on eBay. I'd prefer that you go to Amazon.com or your local Borders and Barnes & Noble.
Well, maybe when I'm finished with this copy, I'll put it up on eBay, see what I can get for it.
We'll have some competition.
All right, we'll continue in just a moment with Ken Walton. Your calls and comments are welcome. 888-5-PETER-B here at the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Tired of stale syndicated right-wing blowhards?
And we are thrilled and honored to have with us Donald Rumsfeld.
You got a bunch of dopey kids watching these shows. Oh, O'Reilly!
Here on KRXA 540, you can hear a fresh local liberal blowhard.
And another thing, Coach, you can strip me naked, stake me to an anthill, pour honey all over me, uh-huh. and I still wouldn't vote for a Republican.
Hal on the show every morning from 9 to 10, only on KRXA 540.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special.
Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Have you ever wanted to make a fortune selling your junk on eBay? Kenneth Walton tells the story of the ups and downs of an eBay art seller in the new book called Fake. Enter detectives.
Last girl sat one with a deep fake, still a plain trick with a local red. She looks so good that he gets down in the text. She is watching the detectives.
As we mentioned, Ken Walton's new book is called Fake, Forgery, Lies, and eBay, How One Man's Con Game Created an International Scandal and Triggered a Nationwide Manhunt by the FBI. Now, Ken, you were an attorney, but you left your law practice because of the lure of essentially making easy money on eBay. And along the way, as you tell the story, you did cut some corners and violate some of the rules of eBay, such as bidding up some of your items that you had for sale using phony user IDs and a few other little tricks that you use, none of which I found deeply offensive. I kind of expect that at a place like eBay. But then you kind of hit the jackpot with this Diebenkorn painting, Richard Diebenkorn, that people are aware of his impressionist art. And you put it up there, and ultimately you got a bid for $135,000. Now, it's hard for me to imagine that anybody, even of the different descriptions that we talked about in the preceding segment, the academic, the slummer, the compulsive collector, it's hard to imagine that anybody would part with $135,000 for a painting they haven't even touched yet.
It was hard for me to fathom that as well. And I'd seen a lot of crazy things happen on eBay, but I was astonished when this auction went up this high. I mean, this was, I mean, up until this point, all of the art that I'd gotten that might have been altered, it all came from the guy I was working with, Ken Fetterman.
Mm-hmm.
This was my very first attempt at a forgery. It's really when I stepped over the line and I found this unsigned painting, and, you know, it looked a bit like a Diebenkorn to me, so I tried his initials down in the corner, and I put it up on eBay, and I really played dumb about it. I used all the strategies I was describing, and the man who was the high bidder, the classic example of the wealthy dilettante. He was a software executive from the Netherlands who obviously had a lot of money to throw around, and he just decided he felt pretty good about it and wanted to take a chance. So he put a massive bid on the painting, and it started attracting attention of you know, national media.
Right.
Immediately, because everybody thought that I was this, you know, everyday Joe who found a painting in his garage and was completely taken by surprise.
When had this price point set a record, the 135 grand?
At the time, people were saying it was definitely the most that had ever been bid on a piece of art on eBay, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not sure if it was the biggest thing ever to sell on eBay, but it was. If it wasn't, it was close. It was definitely like in that very upper echelon of the biggest eBay auctions ever.
And which honor came first, the attention of the New York Times or the FBI?
The press came first. The New York Times, a reporter from the New York Times started emailing me even before the auction ended. And followed by the Sacramento Bee and the San Francisco Chronicle and a number of other papers. And, you know, the first day I was reluctant to talk to any of them, so they didn't really know a lot about what was going on, but they nevertheless all printed stories about this mystery man, this guy who'd found this painting and who didn't know what it was and had it sell for so much. And then over the course of the next 2 days, they all started discovering more and more about me.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that I was really an attorney and I'd sold art on eBay in the past and I didn't have a spotless track record, and it came out that I'd bid on the painting myself. And so the facts all started unraveling, and I, you know, really had to face the music.
Yeah. Now, as an attorney, at what point did you decide you needed a lawyer?
Well, right after, you know, several weeks after this auction, I thought everything was going to die down, and I thought I was going to be able to move on with my life. But a New York Times reporter was very tenaciously following this out. There was actually an art dealer who's an expert on Deben Korn down in Carmel, California.
Mm-hmm.
So you may have some listeners down there.
We do.
And his name's David Carlson. He owns Carlson Gallery, and he actually spotted this thing as a fake on eBay, and he tried to get eBay to take it down, and they just didn't take him seriously. And so after the auction ended, he ended up contacting the New York Times and you know, began giving them some information, and that kind of sparked the interest of a reporter. And she ended up doing a big investigative report into my dealings on eBay. And that was several weeks later. And then a few days after that, she called me one day and said, "Have you heard from the FBI?"
Uh-huh.
And that was the first I'd heard of any kind of an investigation. And
mm-hmm.
I guess the FBI had announced to the press that they were doing an investigation into my eBay activities. And
ultimately, did you take a plea that caused you to give up your law license?
Yeah, I mean, when the feds come after you, it's a tough thing to fight. And I, you know, they were accusing me of basically doing exactly what I was doing, and I didn't think it would lead to a prosecution, but it did. And when I knew they were going to prosecute, I should say that I got an attorney as soon as I heard about the FBI investigation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we went in and cooperated, and I got a plea bargain, and mm-hmm. I agreed to testify against Fetterman because they had sort of researched it and realized that he was kind of the big fish, and they wanted to go after him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to give my law license, so to pay $75,000 in restitution, which I was able to do ultimately, and then I had a probationary sentence as well.
Mm-hmm. And now you're an author, and I think you're a pretty good writer.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I think you make the story very interesting, and I think it's a good read. The book is called Fake. Now, I have a couple of quick questions for you. Is mm-hmm. there any kind of a police department at eBay? Do they have people who examine every posting and try to determine whether it's legitimate or not?
No. eBay does have a fraud division, and I know they take it very seriously, but there's no way that they could police every auction. You've got, you know, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions of auctions going up every day. So I think what they do is they depend on the communities of users that surround different types of things that are sold. Like there's the baseball card guys, there's the art people, you know, there's the antiques. Different crowds will spot fakes
mm-hmm.
going up in their own categories, and they'll report them. Does that eliminate the site of all fake items? No, it doesn't even come close. I mean,
yeah.
Unfortunately, although eBay has cracked down, I mean, it's the problem of counterfeit items, faked items, inauthentic items being sold on the site. Mm-hmm. It's as bad as ever, and users really do need to be cautious.
Ken, what's up with all these emails I get every day? I don't have an account at eBay, but they send me a note that there's some buyer who is upset with me, and I'm supposed to respond right away. And likewise, I get four or five of these PayPal things that they're about to close my account, and I don't have one.
Yeah, that is that's a serious problem. That's what they call phishing, and it's phishing with a PH.
Right.
Like fat. And yeah. What these people are doing, they're sending out mass emails to huge lists of people, and you're on these lists, and they're just hoping that you might have an eBay account or you might have a PayPal account. And they're just hoping that if you do,
I'm going to respond and give them information that'll allow them to use that account.
You'll click on a link, and you'll go to a site, and it'll look just like eBay, or it'll look just like PayPal. And, you know, if you don't know the difference, you might put in your information, and they'll be able to get a credit card number or get your eBay account information. And
Ken, I'm out of time. Thanks a lot for joining us. Thanks for telling your story. It's called Fake, Forgery, Lies, and eBay. Kenneth Walton, our guest. Visit his website, kennethwalton.com. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just-renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
No ceasefire emerges from a meeting on the crisis in the Middle East.
More are being killed, more destruction, and more aggression against the civilians in Lebanon.
And a promise from the Iraqi Prime Minister.
Iraqis are your allies in the war on terror.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Cammie McCormick. The international meeting in Rome on the Middle East crisis failed to agree on details of a ceasefire.
We are all agreed that we want most urgently to end the violence on a basis that this time will be sustainable.
U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice refused to call for an immediate ceasefire, and the fighting continued. It was one of the deadliest days yet for the Israeli military. Here's correspondent Dan Raviv.
All day, Israelis listening to the news on radio and TV heard there were casualties in fierce fighting, and many listeners guessed that meant there were deaths. Once the families of the fallen were informed, the country was told on newscasts at midnight local time. The top story, 9 Israeli soldiers killed, dozens wounded. Israelis realize they're facing a stubborn enemy, well able to organize surprise ambushes.
Most of those deaths occurred in Ben Jebel, a key Hezbollah stronghold. Israeli planes hit the southern Lebanese city of Tyre, targeting buildings believed used by Hezbollah. But while the air bombardment appears to be easing somewhat, the ground battles may intensify. CBS News military analyst Jeff McCausland on what the Israeli military is up against.
They may at this juncture be the victims of a series of bad choices. They may have assumed that air power would take care of the problem. It has not. They may have assumed that there could be an international force brought in. So right now, they may think this is the only option they got left.
A new CBS News New York Times poll finds many Americans think Israel shares the blame for the current fighting, and a majority think it likely the conflict will spread. Now this.
CompUSA email bag.
Lisa emails, Dear CompUSA, I need a great camera, but I'm a student, so I also need a great deal. Okay, Lisa, how about $120 off a 5-megapixel Kodak EasyShare digital camera? That's right, $120 off. That puts it under $130 after savings and rebate, our lowest price ever. That and hundreds more back-to-school deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA. We got it, we get it. See store for details.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed. But now it's easier to find answers in one place. Chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way. The answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com. Your complete chemotherapy guide.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki spoke to Congress today, telling lawmakers his country is a key ally in the war on terror.
It is your duty and our duty to defeat this terror. Iraq is the front line in this struggle.
He received several standing ovations, but some Democrats stayed away, angry that Maliki has refused to criticize Hezbollah for its attacks on Israel. Saddam Hussein was back in court today in Baghdad after his release from the hospital, where he'd been hooked up to a feeding tube because of his hunger strike.
He looked noticeably thinner, but he was still the old Saddam, very defiant. He insisted at one point that if he did get the death penalty, that he did not want to be hanged. He wanted to be shot because he was a soldier and that's what he deserved. If Saddam is found guilty, of course, he could face the death penalty. In that case, there would be a quick appeal. And if he loses that appeal, Iraqi law says he's supposed to be executed within 30 days.
Correspondent Mark Strassman in Baghdad. A verdict today in the retrial of Andrea Yates, who drowned her young children in a bathtub.
We, the jury, find the defendant, Andrea Pia Yates, not guilty by reason of insanity.
This is Steve Futterman at the County Courthouse in Houston. The decision was a stunning reversal. In Andrea Yates' first trial, she was found guilty, this time not guilty by reason of insanity. Yates' lead attorney, George Parnum, said it was the right decision.
Mental health, I think, has been addressed. This case is almost a watershed for mental illness in the criminal justice system.
Yates stood stoically as the verdict was announced. She showed no emotion.
Officials in California now investigating whether more than 50 deaths may be related to the heat wave. In Stanislaus County, they've declared an emergency, meaning farmers can bury the cows they're losing to the heat. Kevin Soros is a dairy farmer.
They just start panting, and as soon as they hit the floor, they're gone.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Do you have over $10,000 in credit card debt?
Are you tired of harassing phone calls and struggling to make ends meet?
You may qualify for a little-known program through Credit Answers. This program allows you to pay back only a small portion of the credit card debt you owe.
In fact, up to 60% of your credit card debt could completely be wiped clean. It's a proven program.
The best part is Credit Answers does all the work for you.
So grab all your credit card statements and call for a free, no-obligation consultation. The friendly counselors at Credit Answers will give you all the details.
Call 800-936-0760. That's 800-936-0760.
Remember, you need to have at least $10,000 in credit card debt to qualify and the desire to be free from it.
For your free, no-obligation consultation, please call us. 800-936-0760. Credit Answers.
Settle your debt. Get on with your life.
Call 800-936-0760. That's 800-936-0760.
Is your city ready for it?
And we launch into another hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. I'm glad you're listening. Coming up later this hour, we're going to talk about the political activist from Arizona, Mark Osterloh. He is a medical doctor and an attorney. He was the framer, the guy who wrote the legislation that became the Clean Money Act in Arizona. And he is now floating a ballot measure that would pay $1 million. Gosh, that sounds like Austin Powers. $1 million to one lucky voter who shows up on Election Day. It's a way to enhance voter turnout. And it's controversial. We'll be talking with him about that coming up after the bottom of the hour. And usually at this time, we present an update on the situation in the Middle East with Chris Tonsing from Middle East Report. He had to take the day off today. He'll be back with us tomorrow. And also, by the way, I just confirmed that I have to report for jury duty tomorrow morning. I don't know if I will be paneled into the jury, but in that event, Matt Renner, my able producer, will be sitting in here tomorrow. So if that happens, don't be shocked and don't blame Carl Rove, at least not yet. Joining us this half hour is attorney Paul Lehto, L-E-H-T-O. He hails from Washington State, and he has been retained to pursue challenges to the election, the special election that was held in San Diego on June 6th of this year, to select the person to fill out the term of Randy Duke Cunningham, the Republican congressman now residing in the slammer after pleading guilty to having been bribed. Over $2 million was dumped into his bank accounts and lined his pockets. And I want to welcome you to the program, Mr. Leto. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And what caused you to decide to take on this case in San Diego right now?
Well, I decided it's really the leading election issue in the country right now.
Your phone is a little faint. Can you speak a little closer to it, please?
Sure.
Thank you.
It's really the leading election issue in the country right now. And some people down here called me up, and I had been monitoring the issues and what had been going on in San Diego with the sleepovers, the broken seals, the machines, the secret vote counting, and the whole bit. And I know that there's some issues down here, so I'm really happy to be involved.
Well, and I'm not quite paying your bill, but I did make a contribution to the fund from which your fees are being paid. So I am happy that you're operating on my behalf to some extent.
Well, thanks for the contribution.
Well, we've been following this since the 7th of June, Paul, because we really feel that Brad Friedman at bradblog.com, who has covered this story in depth, brought to our attention serious deficiencies in the electoral process. Now, before we go into detail about California District 50, I'd like to talk about your fascinating background, and in particular, the study you did on the razor-thin election for governor of Washington State just a couple of years back, where ultimately Ms. Gregoire was declared the winner. But the day after Election Day, it was a margin of only 43 votes. Is that correct?
Well, that was that was the initial count, and there was a machine recount in which the Republican was still ahead, and then finally in the hand recount, which, because of the way it's set up, is actually the most accurate way to count votes. Gregoire, the Democrat, ended up winning the hand count, and that was upheld in the election contest.
And in the report that I read online last night, I was fascinated by some of the details that you reported, and in particular, there were DRE machines, these touchscreen computer-based voting machines, that were flipping votes, and they only did it in one direction. You could not find a case, if I read your report accurately, where a vote was flipped from the Democrat to the Republican. They all worked in the other direction.
That's correct. That was based on data from the election officials themselves. It was based on national call-in data and every other source that I could find. There were only reports of flips from Democrats to Republicans, and in one case, two Libertarian candidates, and not the other way around. There's only one person that I've heard of, but this was like something like 2 weeks after the election, who claimed that Republican vote was flipped to Democrat, but that was really after people started talking about this stuff.
All right, Paul Leto, we're going to disconnect and dial you right back. We're not getting a very good connection. We hope the phone company will give us a better one on our next try. Paul Leto, L-E-H-T-O, is our guest, and he has just signed on to take the case in the Busbee-Bill Bray post-election skirmishes regarding the manner in which the election was conducted, and these are issues that we've talked about in great detail with Brad Friedman on his weekly Friday visits here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And this is the next step, and I'm very pleased to see that it is underway. So we'll get the attorney back on the line here in just a minute. He's going to be with us till the bottom of the hour. So if you have a question or comment, I know many of you have been following this pretty carefully, so feel free to give us a call, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-5-PETER-B, or 888-573-8372. That's how you connect up with the Peter B. Collins Show. And while we're waiting to get the attorney back on the line, I'll remind you, you can drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com, and there's still time for you to send in an entry to win a case of wine in our first anniversary giveaway. Paul, I've got you back here.
Yes.
Oh, that's much better. Thank you. So the issues that you identified in the contested Dino Rossi-Christine Gregoire race in Washington State, are they replicated, in your view, in what you've seen to date in the San Diego issues?
Yes, there's been reports of vote switching nationwide. on touchscreen voting machines. And it's, again, the 99%, 98% is all from Democrats away to, typically to Republicans, but sometimes to other parties. And that's usually to the candidate who's right next door on the ballot to the Democrat, but sometimes it even flips down, you know, two slots or even three slots. And those kinds of, issues keep repeating themselves. I think the most significant thing that we found in Snohomish County is that when we were able to track by serial number the machines that switched votes and then were taken out of service because they couldn't, figure out how to get them to work properly, even in the closest governor's race in the history of Washington and probably the closest in the history of the United States, and in a Democratic county, the Republican candidate received more than 50% more votes than the Democrat did on those malfunctioning machines.
You also did a comparison between the breakout of the absentee ballots and the breakout of the election day results from the electronic machines.
Yeah, and two-thirds of the people in that county voted on a paper ballot that was a mail-in ballot or an absentee ballot, and then those ended up being hand-counted because of the hand count. So any errors from the original scanning method of counting were eliminated by the hand count. The same was not true with the touchscreens because you can't recount the touchscreens. If you ask a computer to give you the total on something, it'll just give you the same one no matter whether it was right or wrong to begin with.
Understood.
And so even though the paper ballots were two-thirds of all ballots, the Democrat won by 2,000 votes on paper, but in the much smaller population of electronic ballots, the Republican won by a landslide, 8,500 votes. And we calculated that if you were to randomly separate people into paper ballots with two-thirds voting that way and one-third voting on the touchscreen machines, the chances that they would vote that way is one in many, many trillions, so basically statistically impossible.
Kind of like the disparity between the exit polls and the published results in Ohio in 2004?
Right, right.
in that stratosphere somewhere?
Yep, in that stratosphere, yep.
Uh-huh. Okay, the one other thing that I noted in the report that I found interesting, and I mention this because I can hear the minds of skeptics whirring and clicking here, you examined the potential for late-breaking events that might change people's minds, and you were unable to determine any patterns that indicated the kind of tilt to Mr. Rossi that ultimately was reflected in the tainted vote count.
Right. You know, we went through, you know, when you have a difference between the absentee ballots and the election day touchscreens, people always come up with, you know, millions of excuses. They say, well, maybe there was a late surge for one candidate, or maybe that last commercial was really effective for one candidate, or maybe one party has a better absentee balloting program to get out the vote than the other party does. And we looked at each and every one of those. When you're looking at two-thirds of the total vote being on paper, it's extremely hard for either party to swamp or control that data because you're getting really close to all of the voters once you're up to two-thirds. But to answer your question, we looked at the exit polls, and the late-breaking deciders, for example, broke with a slight advantage to the Democrat Gregoire. They did not break to the Republican. So we also noted the fact that a huge chunk of the paper ballots were actually dropped off at the polling places on election day, so they were also voted on election day. So if you wanted to make a theory based on time to suggest that the late breakers or the people that voted on election day just happened to be Republicans, you'd have a really hard time explaining that because so many paper ballots were on election day as well.
We're talking with attorney Paul Lehto, L-E-H-T-O. He's taken the case in District 50, the challenged race between Busby and Bilbray. We'll talk more about that as we continue. Your questions and comments are welcome right now. You can call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. 17 minutes past the hour. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. For whatever legal advice you need, Go to Lawyers on Duty. Whether it's for your estate planning, divorce, custody, probate, or a living trust, Lawyers on Duty has experienced attorneys with realistic fees. There's no need to go anywhere else. At Lawyers on Duty, they're available, knowledgeable, and affordable. Located in the courtyard behind Rosine's on Alvarado Street, Monterey. Lawyers on Duty open every weekday 9 to 5. Call Lawyers on Duty, 375-5100. 375-5100. Alan Kaplan, owner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
The Monterey County Democrats invite all KRXA listeners to join them this Saturday from noon to 3 at the Democratic Reunion and Voter Registration Drive Kickoff Picnic. The drive and picnic will take place at Natividad Creek Park, 1395 Nogal Drive in Salinas. This is a unique opportunity to meet with your elected leaders, candidates, and special guests in a casual setting while enjoying free food and fun. RSVP to 1-866-679-3367 or browse to www.democrats.org.
The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop. Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 21 minutes past the hour. We're talking about the election, the special election that was held in California on June 6th to select a short-term replacement for convicted Congressman Randy Duke Cunningham. And the declared winner is the Republican Brian Bilbray. But the day after the election, many of us were concerned because the margin at that point was, and I can remember it graphically, 4,372 votes. Wait a minute. No, it was 4,237 votes. It was one of those. It was in the 4,000 range. The ultimate count showed about a 7,000 vote margin between the two. And to date, Mr. Leto, has this election been certified?
Well, it has been certified on June 29th.
although I think it's fair to say that the government officials involved have really have no idea what the total is, but they nevertheless certified a total.
Mm-hmm. And what is your position regarding the hand count that has been requested by a resident of the district, a woman named Jacobson, and the way the voter registrar, Michael Haas, has responded to that demand?
Well, they're trying to price it completely out of the market, asking for over $100,000. You know, they basically want daily $6,000 checks, and it's going to take a long time, and they'll only work six-hour days. So it's just it's obviously an attempt to hold the truth hostage and to hide various information that they're just simply not willing to produce.
And as you enter the picture here, I don't want you to give away any confidential issues, but what will your strategy be in general?
Well, our strategy is to find out what the truth is. And, you know, we're going to continue to do that regardless of whether the court is ultimately interested in the truth or not. We expect the defendants to make all kinds of procedural motions to try to avoid getting to the merits of the issue. But, you know, the general idea is to get to the truth and to put this entire debate and issue here in the proper context, which is democracy itself. In the particular context of elections, you know, the people are in charge. And, you know, you can't play hide the ball from the people and say we're not going to prove to the people that our power is legitimate because we fairly and truly won this election. That's an absurd proposition. It's really ultimately an anti-democratic proposition, and it's not something that should be tolerated, and in fact isn't tolerated in the law. But they're hiding behind claims of trade secrecy and things like that that just don't belong in vote counting and elections, because that is the most public possible forum you could really ever have.
Brad Friedman has pointed out that a hand count in Orange County is about 14 cents a vote. The current quote from Michael Haas puts it at over a dollar to recount or to hand count each vote. Is there any legal recourse there to set a reasonable standard for the cost of these post-election analyses?
Yeah, well, the public records request laws of all the states, including California, set limits on what you can charge for documents. And so those are not being respected. So, yeah, there's specific statutes and regulations in the states all over the country that limit what you can charge for public records, because the idea is, you know, of the Sunshine Laws is to freely make government information available and at a reasonable price.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you could briefly recap the issues, we've talked about the so-called sleepovers, machines that were out of the custody of election employees and in the hands of temporary workers, sometimes for up to 2 weeks. They were able to take them home, keep them in their cars, and that is a direct violation of the protocols established by California's Secretary of State when he recertified these electronic voting machines for use in the 2006 cycle.
That's correct. And, you know, we just have no idea what happened to those machines. And it's important to understand that it would only take access to one single results cartridge to put basically undetectable code on there that could alter the election. So we're not saying that anything but 99% of all people that come in contact with elections are anything but honorable. But at the same time, considering what's at stake, it's naive to assume that nobody wants to influence the election. A simple example is, you know, if there's an online poll, granted it's an unscientific poll, but basically all of us tell only our like-minded friends, hey, go and vote in this online poll. Well, that distorts the results. It gives a false, you know, read on what the result is. It's like stuffing the ballot box. We all tend to do that, or basically all of us tend to do that. So now if we're talking about control of the Congress or control of the world's only military superpower and richest nation, gee, would there be anybody who might want to, you know, like, stuff the ballot box? Of course there would.
Well, and you don't have to be a partisan to recognize that the stakes were very high for the Republican Party in this race. It's a Republican district that they did not want to lose, and they didn't want the stain of Duke Cunningham to be replicated in other races around the country. So it was a do-or-die situation, and if one believes that Republicans gamed the system in Florida in 2000 and again in Ohio in 2004, it wouldn't be inconsistent to have those suspicions today.
Right. Well, the stain of Duke Cunningham is here, and it adheres in the election, and here's why. The reason Duke Cunningham was able to take $2.4 million in bribes which he's, you know, pled guilty to, is because of the secret Intelligence Committee budgeting process. That secrecy facilitates wrongdoing. And what do we have in the counting process of both touch screens as well as the optical scans? We have secrecy. We have trade secrecy. We have unwillingness to give us copies of the ballots at either any price or at least at a reasonable price, and just hiding the ball. You know, secrecy facilitates wrongdoing. I guess I realize my mom was right now. Said, you know, what you do in the dark reveals your character.
Steve and Salinas join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with attorney Paul Leto.
Good afternoon. Yeah, I think this whole thing, the whole election should be nullified, void and nullified, because it was not run properly. And it just seems real simple to just have a revote with hand-counted paper ballots. But the election should not count, regardless of who won, because of the way the machines were treated.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we are seeking to void out this particular election result and to seek a new election.
And we should just go to hand-counted paper ballots every place.
All right, Steve, thank you very much. And just a final question, Paul. Have any new supporters come into play? The Democratic Party, any other interest groups ready to pony up cash to help with this challenge?
Well, there's a lot of support and a lot of excitement. I don't know if I, you know, would be okay to give names until I ask them about that. But yeah, I don't really see anybody who's not supporting this effort. In fact, when I talk to groups around the country about electronic voting in general, I don't even find Republicans disagreeing with what I have to say.
Yeah.
It's just that once an election result is locked in, then you've got a winner and a loser, and people pick sides, and
right.
You know, they say it's a sore loser.
Paul, we're out of time. It's a pleasure to talk with you. I'm glad you're on the case, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Go after him.
Thanks.
This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hans Auto Repair in Seaside is hands down the finest Volvo maintenance and repair shop in Monterey County. Owners Mike Brooks and Tracy Palacco are both factory trained in Volvo service and repair. They provide outstanding quality and great service at reasonable prices. They only work on Volvos, so you know that your Volvo will be in caring and skilled hands. Hans Auto Repair is at 384 Olympia Avenue in Seaside, or you can call Mike and Tracy at 583-9820. That's 583-9820.
I'm Chuck Mackley, owner of Executive Financial Services. I can get you up to 12% interest on your investment on first and second trust deeds secured by real property. Don't settle for 3 to 5% on your money. Call me today at 443-7277. Your investment will be protected by the equity in the property and title insurance. Put your hard-earned money to work. Call Executive Financial Services at 443-7277 and ask for Chuck Mackley.
Childhood Matters, the show for parents and everyone who cares about our kids.
From colic to tantrums to transitions, our children often express their discomfort by crying. I'm Nurse Rona. Join me and my guest Tanya Crowder, author of the book When Your Baby Won't Stop Crying, to discuss the underlying causes of our children's tears. Call in Sunday with your questions.
Childhood Matters, this Sunday morning at 9 on KRXA 540.
On Sunday, July 30th at 6:30 p.m., Palestinian Ambassador Afif Safia will speak at the Monterey Institute of International Studies Irvine Auditorium, 499 Pierce Street. The Institute's Graduate School of International Policy Studies and its Conflict Resolution Club, the Peace Coalition for Monterey County, and Citizens for Middle East Peace, a local interfaith alliance, are sponsoring the free talk to be given by the ambassador from Palestine, followed by a benefit reception. For more information, please call 373-1715.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a good affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery.
In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes past the hour. Coming up next hour, we're going to talk about the death penalty with Mike Farrell. You remember Mike Farrell? He was the star of MASH. He's made in many other great movies. And in addition to his Hollywood career, he's been quite an activist. And he's written an open letter to the next Attorney General of California, one Jerry Governor Moonbeam Brown. We're going to talk about that. That's with Mike Farrell coming up about a half hour from now. But first, let's go to Arizona and talk about Proposition 200. Yes, for the love of money, people will do all kinds of things. That's the wisdom of the OJs, circa 1977. And joining us from Arizona is Dr. Mark Osterloh. He's also an attorney, and he was the man who was lead author of the 1998 Clean Elections Campaign Finance Reform Law. Mark Osterloh, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
It's a pleasure.
And first, let me commend you for the clean money proposition, because we believe that that is an important step toward reducing the corruption in our political system, the pay-to-play games that plague state capitals and Washington, D.C. And it's an important step to returning our democracy to, you know, functional form.
Oh, I agree with you. And I like to say, if we want reform, we got to stop funding our campaigns with bribes.
Yeah, well, I think that's very valuable. Now, your Clean Money Act is under attack from a Republican legislator who's made several recent efforts to try to gut it.
Yeah, they've gone to court like about seven times, and we've won every time. They went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the court let the law stand. So we're not worried. The law is sound in the aspect that it is voluntary. Politicians can decide to run clean or dirty, but they have the option to run clean here, and that's what saves it. If they don't want to, they want to run the old-fashioned way and old favors, they can. But people out there, you know, they ought to ask their politicians, are you running dirty or are you running clean? Do you represent us or do you represent the people who fund your campaign? So we're not worried about that. They've tried everything under the sun, but it's been upheld for years.
Now, you might be able to help me out with the name of this wayward legislator, but he recently filed a new brief based on the Supreme Court overturning the Vermont very restrictive campaign finance law. And the big distinction, as I understand it, is that your candidate in Arizona, this Republican who's challenging it, actually accepted voluntarily the clean money terms, and now he's turning around and legally challenging them.
Well, I haven't read the Supreme Court decision, but my understanding of it was so restrictive that it did not allow challengers to come in, and it was basically an incumbent protection bill. In fact, our initiative is much more of an equal playing field bill. People can go the old-fashioned way, and they can spend as much as they want. We have not interfered with that. But it really helps challengers can come in and get the same amount of funding in a campaign, which in the past has been almost unheard of because, you know, people that fund the campaigns want to go with almost a sure horse, and the people that are in there are usually the sure horses. So we don't feel that that'll be a problem. But, you know, the people that want to own the government, they'll do anything they can to make sure they keep control of it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I appreciate your work in that arena. I'm also looking at Proposition 200, which you have qualified for the ballot this year. And it essentially is a lottery for people who show up to vote with a grand prize of $1 million. Is that a fair characterization?
Well, hey, that sounds like a good incentive to me. Yep.
Well, you got some attention in the San Francisco Chronicle op-ed section today.
I read that.
Lauren Willis, from an associate professor of law at Loyola Law School in L.A., opened up with a blockbuster paragraph here. Arizona's ballot initiative to turn voting into gambling sends citizens the wrong message about both. We should not frame democracy as a crapshoot, a high-stakes game that requires no effort or thought. The kind of voting we want to encourage, voting that reflects the considered judgment of the governed, requires work. So what's your retort there, Doctor?
You know, this is one of those legal smoke and mirror arguments and stuff. The people that are opposed to this initiative basically do not want every American citizen voting. They want to keep it the way it is, where only a small minority of people are voting, and those are the ones that determine who our government is, and it's not truly a representative government. It's not gambling. There's a lot of accusations. It's not gambling. Gambling is when you give money to somebody in the hopes of winning money. What it is, it's a capitalist incentive to reward people who exercise their patriotic duty of voting. It is, and I like to use this example, and I like to go to the ultimate authority in morals and ethics because somehow they say this is unethical or immoral. If incentives are good enough for God, they're good enough for the voters of Arizona.
Okay, explain.
I will explain it. What does God say in essence? Do what you're supposed to do, and I will reward you with eternal life in heaven. What are we saying? Do what you're supposed to do, vote, and we'll reward you with the chance to win $1 million. Hey, he uses incentives to deal with us, we'll use incentives too. I mean, capitalism won out over communism because they had incentives built into the system. Capitalism has made our country great, so we're just going to use it here.
My concern is what I call the moron factor.
Yeah. Well, you know, they always use this argument to say, oh, we're going to bring out the wrong kind of voters.
Right.
And we're going to bring out people that are uneducated and don't know, well, the issues of the candidates. Well, those discredited arguments were the exact same ones that were used in the past to say, we can't let Native Americans vote. We can't let women vote. And we can't let African Americans vote. Look, when people decide that they're going to vote for whatever reason, they're going to want to elect people that will take care of their issues, be it fixing the potholes in the front of their house, making sure they've got good quality schools, or making sure there's health care for everybody. Now, right now, our country spends multiple millions of dollars on these minimally effective get-out-the-vote efforts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
For $1 million, I can get everybody to the polls. All those millions of dollars can be spent on educating those voters on the candidates and the issues so they will go to the polls and they will be educated, and you have a true win-win situation.
Well, maybe.
Well, I do believe every American citizen who is eligible should vote.
Well, I agree with that. Now, here's my problem. We saw Jesse Ventura get elected governor of Minnesota because Minnesota permits same-day voter registration. And in concept, I'm okay with that. If you don't get around to registering until the day you show up to vote, but your desire is to vote and, you know, you've done a little bit of homework, I can accept that. But what occurred with Ventura was a bunch of wrestling fans, mostly young males, who had never voted before or who didn't have a habit of voting, showed up, registered, and got Jesse Ventura elected to office. And I think that by most accounts, it's accepted that he was a near total failure as governor of Minnesota. And you may say, well, that was the will of the people at the moment. But I don't believe he would have been elected were it not for the morons who showed up on election day and put him over the top.
Well, that sounds like a good slap-down play, I think they would call it.
Let's smack it down.
And it's different here in Arizona. In fact, you have to register several weeks in advance to qualify to get on the ballot here. So those are two different issues. But, you know, you're talking about the uneducated thing and stuff like that, and I keep hearing this argument, but people will, human nature shows us, that people will do things in their own enlightened self-interest. I mean, if a husband and wife are not going to buy a car, they're not going to study all the models and the features and the costs and the safety ratings. But once they decide they're going to buy a car, they're going to study all the options they have, and then they will make a decision what is the best vehicle for themselves. The same with people. They're not going to study the issues and candidates if they're not going to vote. Once they decide they are, they will go ahead and study them. Now, let me give you a real practical example. There's about 20 countries that have some form of mandatory voting. We can't do that in the United States because of a free speech constitutional issue.
Mm-hmm.
But let me give you an example. In Australia, if you don't vote, it's a $20 fine, and 95% of the people in Australia vote. Now, in our country, maybe half of the people register to vote, and of the ones that register, only half of those turn out in a good election, and that's the general, not to mention primaries or special elections where we're talking in single digits. But with 95% of the people in Australia compared to 25% voter turnout here, what are some differences? In Australia, everybody has health care. In America, everybody doesn't have health care. In Australia, the minimum wage is over $9 per hour. Here it's $5.15. You try living on that. In Australia, they've got great schools. You just, I'm always reading about our schools over here. That's the real life implications of everybody voting versus a small minority of people voting.
Well, I do understand that, and I desire to see as many people participate as possible. But I don't think it's that difficult right now. And I would be happy to have weekend voting, to have a holiday on Election Day to make it easy for people to go so they don't have to take the day off or vote at 8 o'clock in the evening. And I'm interested in a lot of different approaches, and I recognize the severity of the problem, Doctor. We had a 30% turnout for our primary here in California. I was bummed about that.
That's 30% of the people that are registered. Maybe half of them are registered, so you're talking about only 15%, maybe 1
right.
6.
But, Doctor, then I was in Washington, D.C. in mid-June when Virginia held its primary. Do you know what the turnout was there?
3.5%, I think.
3.44%. My listeners are tired of hearing me talk about it.
Is
but
this democracy?
I was stunned.
Hey, you know, in that article you mentioned, they gave all of these examples. Well, look, for decades and decades, they've been thinking about all kinds of ideas and trying all kinds of ideas, and they haven't worked. And these are just a whole bunch more ideas to not really solve the problem. It's a smoke and mirrors thing, and none of those are really going to solve the problem. What you want to do is have a real incentive that will really motivate people. Let's make it simple, and let's make it effective, and that's what this incentive will do.
Is Proposition 200 sunsetted? In other words, is it offered on a trial basis, and then it could be extended, or is it just...
No.
If it passes, that's the law.
It will become law and effective right away. And, in fact, it is retroactive, which means that anybody that votes in the primary this September gets one chance to win $1 million. If they vote in the general, they get a second chance to win $1 million. So, in fact, we get an increased turnout in the primary. By the time everybody goes to the general election, we'll have proved that the system works.
And who puts up the $1 million, Doctor?
The money comes from the unclaimed prize fund of the Arizona Lottery.
Okay, that's very creative. But the next thing I can imagine is we'll sell the naming rights to the Election Day giveaway, and it's the Nike Get Out the Vote $1 million giveaway.
Well, hey, that's cool. If they want to give a bunch of shoes as prizes, too, that's just fine with me.
All right. We're going to take a break. Then we're going to go to the phone. Some callers want to talk with you if you have a question or comment about this $1 million giveaway to get out the vote in Arizona. Get on the line now. 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. My guest is Dr. Mark Osterloh of Phoenix, Arizona, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
We Would you like to be part of a conversation that might not only inspire your golf game, but have you thinking differently about sports, about learning, and about performance? Join golf pro and best-selling author Fred Shoemaker on KRXA 540 Saturday mornings at 8 a.m. for Extraordinary Golf, some uncommon conversations about golf, and maybe even a little beyond golf. Extraordinary Golf, Saturday mornings on KRXA 540 at 8 a.m.
Tom Hartman.
Resolution 1440 explicitly said that no force could be brought to bear on Iraq until either Hans Blix or Muhammad al-Baradei, one of the two weapons inspectors, had indicated that there were either weapons of mass destruction or evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And only then could force be used against Iraq. And that never happened.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
So here's George Bush saying that we took out Saddam Hussein because he wouldn't let in the weapons inspectors. And it was Bush who pulled the weapons inspectors out.
Tom Hartman on KRXA 540.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Good afternoon. It's KRXA 540 traffic. Watsonville, Lewis Road at Salinas Road. Railroad crossing failure. The crossing arms are down with no train in sight, so expect some delays there. San Martin, North 101 before San Martin Avenue. It's a stalled pickup truck. It's blocking the left lane. Carmel, Carmel Valley Road at Prado del Sol. It's a grass fire burning on the hillside near the roadway. The fire department is on scene. You could see some delays as you make your way through the area there. Once again, that's Carmel Valley Road at Prado del Sol. The Toyota Avalon with an EPA estimated 31 miles per gallon on the highway and all the little extras you desire. Avalon, where luxury meets fuel efficiency, with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. My lines are open for you right now at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Do you think it's wise to offer a $1 million reward in order to get people to turn up and vote on Election Day? We're talking with Mark Osterlo from Arizona. He's a medical doctor, an ophthalmologist, and a political activist who also launched the Clean Money campaign in Arizona. And that's a virus we would like to see spread all over the place, Dr. Osterlo.
I can dig that.
And there are efforts underway in California. We expect a ballot measure this fall, which will allow voters to approve a system that is quite similar to the one that you have in Arizona, and that can only be a good step forward. Let's take some calls. We've got Eugenia in Monterey today. Hello, Eugenia. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Several years ago, I read there was research done on taking tests.
Mm-hmm.
If you dive bomb a test, you'll come out with 25% right.
Okay.
That's about, okay, we got about 25% of the people voting.
Right.
To specific interest. So it will come out better if people just dive bombed, the whole country just dive bombed the test. We'd probably come out better. Right?
Well, that's not the approach I want to embrace.
I know it's not, but think about it. I thought about that for a long time when I ran across it. I was working at a college and doing something else, and it fit in with what I was doing. But we need to trust the people more, because everybody is interested in their own self-interest, and the majority of us have the same self-interest. health care, you know, better pay and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority, so the numbers would be swayed by the 25% that were interested in that rather than the 25% of the country that votes. Tailored to, hey, all the money's going up. We need to bring some of it down.
Well, and Dr. Osterloh, what happens when we add to the people who currently turn out to vote who are gray, you know, mostly over 50, people who've been doing it their whole lives? When we add in the Wheel of Fortune voter, what do we get?
Well, we make our government much more representative, and I agree. The people that aren't voting aren't getting representative. There are issues like health care, good schools, a viable future for their children is not there because of that. And many of them aren't voting right now because they're very frustrated with the system. They don't feel their vote counts because the big money special interests own our politicians, and they've kind of given up. This will give them an incentive to get back in there and take back control of the government for themselves. So I agree with that. And if anybody wants to know more about this law, our website is voterrewards.org with two R's in the middle. And it's an approach that will address those problems.
Yeah, I got the website up in front of me, voterrewards.org. Eugenia, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Nice to talk with you.
Same here.
And we'll go to another call here in a moment, 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to talk with our guest from Arizona, Dr. Osterloh. Here's another example for you, Doctor. We have this Austrian-born action movie star posing as our governor here.
Are you talking Ventura?
No, it's worse.
I'm sorry.
Jesse never, you know, made a movie where he was pretending to be, a male who gave birth.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, whatever.
But here's what happened. Okay, we had the recall. Schwarzenegger was one of 130 candidates.
Mm-hmm.
And he was essentially elected simply because people knew his name.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, it hasn't been a total debacle. But here's a bone that I have to pick with the governor and with the way voters can be manipulated by last-minute television advertising. We have what's called the three strikes law here in California,
mm-hmm.
and it's excessive. And most people recognize that. And there have been several attempts to reform the three strikes law that was jammed through after Polyclas was kidnapped and killed, and people were in a very emotional, kind of fearful state. And so there was a rational reform measure called Proposition 166. It was on the ballot in November of 2004. 3 weeks before the election, the polling showed that it was trending to pass by about 16 percentage points. Enter the Terminator. He got about $3 million from some arch conservatives in Orange County. He went on with television ads that he starred in that played for 10 days before the election. And in the commercials, he lied. He misrepresented, he demagogued the issue of what this ballot measure really would do. And he Willie Hortonized it. He said, 26,000 dangerous felons will be released to the streets of California. Well, that wasn't true. The law only provided that a certain subset of three strikes sentencees would be permitted to petition a court to be resentenced. There was no provision in there to release anybody, on any broad basis. Well, the ballot measure went down to defeat by 12 points, a 28-point swing in 2 weeks, fueled by a popular movie star posing as a governor and $3 million in cash. And that is the kind of case I would make that by offering a bounty or a chance to win $1 million to people who show up and vote, we are going to bring out the people who are most easily manipulated.
Well, that's an argument that's made, but one of the things I think it'll do is when it gets everybody out there and voting, everybody's going to know that virtually everybody else is registered and voting. I think that is going to dramatically increase the amount of political conversation that goes on in this country. People will be talking over the water coolers. You meet somebody in the supermarket, you can talk to them about politics because you know they're going to be voting. Since everybody's going to be voting, it's going to be kind of like having the Commons Green back in the colonial days where you'd have soapbox people talking right there to their neighbors. it'll dramatically increase the political conversation. It will get the information out there, and it's going to get it out there in the non-media controlled way like it is right now. You're talking about a media controlled thing where you get all your information through the press.
Yeah.
There's going to be a lot more conversation. They're going to want more information from the newspapers. They're going to demand more real answers for their politicians. It'll only increase discussion. It'll only increase the education. We will have better people voting. And by George, a lot of those people that might have been affected by this will be voting.
Well, we better get the media to actually cover races instead of relying on paid commercials to deliver those messages. Let's talk to Lisa in Eureka. Hi, Lisa. You're on the air.
I 100% agree with you, Peter, and I totally disagree with him. I totally disagree. I think what's going to happen is you're going to end up with a ton of people who are voting uninformed just for the sake that they could win $1 million, just for that possibility. And I don't care how people vote as long as they're voting informed.
Well, you know what happens, James Carville said, when you drag $100 bills through a trailer park, so think what you get for $1 million.
And exactly. And that's what I think would happen.
All right,
and I
Lisa.
I agree with you so much, Peter, that the people that are so easily manipulated by the lies are the ones that are going to come out in droves and
right.
not voting educated.
Tight for time, Lisa. Appreciate your comment. Now to Brad in Aptos. Hello, Brad. You're on the air.
You know, I disagree with you and the woman who was just on. I think that your position is really disrespectful of the average Joe. I think that when people get inside the voting booth, they are responsible. I think, you know, your example about Jesse Ventura wasn't that, you know, a bunch of yahoos came out and voted for a guy who was unqualified. These are a bunch of people who came out and voted for a person who looked like them and talked like them. Maybe he was bigger and more buff than they are. But, you know, he's kind of who they wanted to be. And one of the problems we have today, the reason that people are turned off, is because all we give to the electorate are politicians. These are people who don't look like you, me, or my neighbors.
All right, Brad, you said it well. I appreciate your comment. We're tight for time, so I want to let Dr. Osterloh have the final word. Go right ahead, sir.
I absolutely agree with that. People that live in trailer parks should be voting, and I've worked with a lot of homeless people that were incredibly knowledgeable about political issues, and they collected signatures for us. So everybody should vote. If you don't believe everybody should vote that's eligible, you don't believe in democracy, period.
You're entitled to your opinion.
Thank you.
Great talking with you, Dr. Mark Osterloh.
You have a great one.
And go to the website, voterrewards.org, to read more about it. Thanks for joining me today. Pleasure talking with you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Mike Farrell talks about the death penalty and his open letter to Attorney General Jerry Brown, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammie McCormick. The Lebanese Prime Minister did not get what he wanted out of an international meeting on the crisis in the Middle East.
For the past 15 days, we are being pounded every day. And scores of people are dying every day.
News reporter Sabita Castelfranco.
Diplomats at a conference on the Middle East held in Rome agreed that the need for a ceasefire is urgent and that an international force is needed for peace to be maintained in the area. But that's as far as they went. There was no agreement on how such a force would be deployed and on what countries would make up the force. And despite the urgency, there was no call for an immediate ceasefire. Sabina Castelfranco, CBS News, Rome.
And the fighting continued, some of the worst so far, with 9 Israeli soldiers killed. Israeli warplanes struck targets in Tyre in southern Lebanon and a Lebanese army base.
I'm Dan Raviv in Tel Aviv. A senior Israeli army general says this war is likely to last several more weeks. While Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, on a visit to towns in the north that have been hit by rockets, says he doesn't intend to announce Israel's plans. In his words, the terrorists will learn the hard way.
A new poll finds most Americans blame both sides for the fighting.
Americans are pessimistic about the current crisis in the Middle East. 61% say in the CBS News New York Times poll that they think it's likely that the conflict between Israel and the Hezbollah militants will spread to the rest of the Mideast.
CBS News Director of Surveys Kathleen Frankovic. Iraq's Prime Minister addressed Congress today and called his country key in the fight against terror. Military commanders are now considering extending the deployment of some U.S. forces as part of the plan to stop the violence in Baghdad. A Houston jury today found Andrea Yates not guilty by reason of insanity in the drowning deaths of her young children. This was her second trial.
She got this verdict this time because jurors focused more during this trial on Yates' mental health and upon the testimony of all those experts who said that Yates clearly did not plan the event or understand in those horrible moments that what she was doing was wrong.
CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen. Airfares may be headed even higher. Delta has announced it's increasing domestic fares by $5 each way to cover fuel costs. And don't expect any relief when you fill up at the gas pump. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports gas prices are not heading south anytime soon.
More than 800 times since 1990, the government has reported the weekly price of gasoline in the U.S. Only once has gas cost more than it does right now, just over $3 a gallon for regular. That's 71% higher than it was just 1 year ago. The Energy Information Administration expects prices to stay at this level at least until after the Labor Day weekend, when demand usually eases. That is, if a major hurricane or other event doesn't disrupt supplies.
On Wall Street, the Dow finished a point lower. This is CBS News.
Yeah, my wife's pregnant, so since she's driving more carefully now, maybe we could get a discount on our rate, huh?
That's a real question that was put to the licensed insurance experts at Progressive Direct. When you call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE, we'll answer your questions and help you find the policy that best fits you. So whether your question's unique or typical...
Will I get a discount if I insure both my cars with you?
In fact, she will. Call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available in most states and situations.
I want to let you in on a little secret, but before I do, could all you car dealers, bankers, and credit card companies switch over to the All Sappy Love Songs All Day Long station? Good. For the rest of you, here's the secret. FreeCreditReport.com. If you know your credit score going in, you may be able to cut a better deal on car loans, refis, even credit cards. And you'll find your free credit score and report at FreeCreditReport.com. That's the secret. Get your free credit score and report with enrollment in Triple Advantage at FreeCreditReport.com. Get the score.
The Washington Supreme Court has upheld that state's ban on same-sex marriage. Massachusetts is still the only state where it's legal. Heather Bosch of KIRO has reaction.
It's not the ruling he wanted.
I am very disappointed.
Robert Court says he's gay and the State Defense of Marriage Act is wrong.
To not allow persons of same sex to get married, it just doesn't seem fair or equal.
But as the state Supreme Court upheld the ban on same-sex marriage, it left the door open for the legislature or Washington State voters to change the law one day.
So it'll be an interesting process, to say the least, as to how this is going to work itself out in the end.
Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
A big cleanup is underway in New Orleans, where the mayor is promising that most of the storm debris left behind by Hurricane Katrina will be cleaned up ahead of the one-year anniversary on August 29th. That includes a lot of flooded-out cars and boats. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
CompUSA email bag.
Lisa emails, Dear CompUSA, I need a great camera, but I'm a student, so I also need a great deal. Okay, Lisa, how about $120 off a 5-megapixel Kodak EasyShare digital camera? That's right, $120 off. That puts it under $130 after savings and rebate. Our lowest price ever. That and hundreds more back-to-school deals are good through Saturday at CompUSA. We got it, we get it. See store for details.
How long will I be in chemotherapy?
What should I ask my doctor?
What are the side effects?
Will I lose my hair?
When will I start to feel better?
What about alternate therapies?
Who can I turn to for help?
If you're facing chemotherapy, it's easy to feel overwhelmed, but now it's easier to find answers in one place, chemotherapy.com. From different types of treatment to side effects, to the right questions to ask along the way, the answers are at your fingertips at www.chemotherapy.com, your complete chemotherapy guide.
Have found us. It's the Peter B. Collins Show up and down the left coast. We're live on KRXA 540, Monterey, Salinas, Santa Cruz, Carmel by the Sea, and that little town called
Freedom.
We're live on KGOE 1480, Eureka, Arcata, Humboldt County. And KGOE listeners get another baseball game coming up in about 4 minutes. The Crabs will be on your radio again this evening. And we'll be back at you live in our same time period tomorrow, Eureka. We're also in the air, on the air in the nighttime, 1240 Talk City, KSAC in Sacramento, and our newest affiliate, KPHX, Phoenix, Arizona's Progressive Talk Station. I'm glad you're listening. Coming up later this hour, we open up the phone lines for the Free Speech Zone. Right now, I want to present Mike Farrell. He's the president of Death Penalty Focus, and you know him as the star of the TV version of MASH, and he's been in many other television and film productions over the years. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Nice to be with you, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I called you yesterday, I mentioned that all too often you and I speak on the eve of an execution in California.
Yeah.
And I wanted to talk to you because we have an unusual situation right now. There is a court-ordered halt. We can't call it a moratorium, in fact, but the courts have suspended executions around the legal issues of the lethal injection process. And however we arrive at a halt to these executions, I'm gratified by that. And I'm also pleased that courts, including the rather conservative U.S. Supreme Court, are taking a close look at the issue of how these executions are conducted. That's important in its own right. But Death Penalty Focus is looking at the overarching issue of the wisdom and the morality of using capital punishment in our society.
Mm-hmm. Indeed we are. And opposing it on the basis on both bases.
Right.
It is unwise in my view. It is also immoral in my view, but it's incredibly destructive, I think, as we look at what's happening in our society and around the world today. I very definitely think that there's a link between the dehumanization process involved in putting people to death and the damage we do to our own character and soul in that process.
Yeah.
And what's going on in Iraq, in the torture chambers in Guantanamo and Abu Ghraib and around the world, and the sort of generalized...
barbarism, how about that word?
Well, that's a good word, yeah. It is really a scary thing to me to watch this this degradation of the American character, and I do believe that we are seeing signs of just that.
Well, I share your view about the linkage, too, to these larger global issues, because we've really seen a sea change in the last 6 or 7 years, where the idea of vengeance, the biblical notion of vengeance, has taken a new hold post 9/11, heavily promoted by the rhetoric of the Bush administration.
Very much so, and it's the lest we not be clear, it's the Old Testament version of the biblical concept of vengeance, as opposed to that in the New Testament, which
mm-hmm.
is what it would seem to me would be that which would dictate the thought processes and the behavior of the people who call themselves Christians in this country that are so loudly out there beating the drum for death and destruction. It's a very odd thing to watch.
Indeed, it's hard to reconcile those who are so extremely pro-life that they will not permit embryos to be used for stem cell research, and yet they are there cheering on executions, even of people who are elderly and infirm, people who have raised serious doubts about their own guilt, not in a, you know, technicality way, but in the very clear-cut manner of, I didn't do it, I wasn't there. And we've seen since the development of accurate DNA testing that there have been many travesties of justice committed, and fortunately DNA has permitted us to rescue, what, over 100 men from death row in this country.
Well, let me correct that. DNA has allowed us to rescue over 160 men and women who have been wrongly convicted. Only 15 of those are from death rows. Mm. We've got now 123 men and women who have been exonerated and freed from death rows, but only 15 of them are as a result of DNA.
Okay, thank you. Still, many people really take the position that if you've been convicted and sentenced to death, you probably did something,
yep.
And we're all better off just to get you out of here, just to eliminate you.
You know, that's so true, Peter, and unfortunately that is the view quite often of people in the prosecutorial ranks. If he didn't do this, he did something. And that's a pretty grotesque state of mind, it seems to me, to be the evidence, to be being spoken by somebody who's supposed to represent the truth-seeking process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to direct people to your website, deathpenalty.org. That's the website for Death Penalty Focus. And right there on the homepage, you have a recent story of Carlos de Luna, who we now know was innocent and may have been wrongfully executed. Tell us a little bit about his case.
Well, the de Luna case is like a number of them that have come up recently. I'm loath to use the word because there are some technicians out there that will jump all over us if we say we know, but we certainly have indications that after de Luna was arrested, tried, convicted, sentenced to death, and executed, facts have come to the fore as a result of some diligent investigation by some reporters that indicate that de Luna was not the man who committed the crime. There was another individual who was named, actually, by de Luna as the person who was the perpetrator of the crime. The prosecutor at trial said this man was a phantom, while his co-prosecutor knew the man existed, knew the man's M.O., knew the man was guilty of a like crime, and kept his mouth shut. And it's the old process, in my view, of the win-at-any-cost mentality that takes over too many prosecutorial offices, where these people say, you know, I need this win, or this win is going to do me good in terms of my track record and my advancement as in my political career, et cetera, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So de Luna is one of the more recent ones. There are now four cases that are being discussed. You know about Ruben Cantu, also a Texan who was executed in the mid-90s for a crime that the primary witness and one who was wounded in the crime itself has now said, I didn't tell the truth when I fingered him, when I said he was the guilty one. I did so because I was being pressured by the police to implicate him, and he's not the man who shot me.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned Texas. That is the venue for the de Luna case as well.
Yes.
And many people look at George W. Bush rightfully as one of the most eager executioners as governor in our recent history.
Mm-hmm.
It should also be noted that Texas has the most restrictive appeals process for someone who is convicted and sentenced to death. You have 30 days to introduce new evidence, and if you can't do it in the 30 days after your conviction, never mind.
Wow.
It's
just amazing. When you look at the Texas system, and so many of these state systems, but you're quite right to single out Texas as being the most egregious offender. When you look at the system and you look at the mindset that begins to be built around that system, there's a case that you may be aware of down there where a man was convicted of capital murder and sentenced to death on the basis of, not on the basis of, but in spite of the fact that his lawyer was sleeping through most of the trial.
Yeah.
And when he appealed his case, and it has since been overturned, when he appealed his case, one of the Texas appellate court judges heard the evidence and said, you know, the Constitution guarantees you the right to attorney at trial. It doesn't guarantee you that he's going to be awake.
Wow.
We can laugh. Of course, this guy is facing the gallows of, mm-hmm. So not so funny to him. But
And Mike Farrell, I seem to recall, so tell me if I'm right or wrong here, that Justice Antonin Scalia has flatly stated that he believes that no innocent man has ever been executed in this country.
Yeah, he stated just recently there was a case before the Supreme Court about Kansas's Kansas death penalty was put on hold because its court determined that the way in which Kansas made its determination about guilt or death or no death based on mitigating circumstances,
mm-hmm.
you know, the new process allows for aggravating and mitigating circumstances to be presented to the jury so that they can determine whether or not this individual has, there are reasons that he or she should not get the death penalty.
Right.
Kansas took the position that if they were equal, that the default position was that the individual would get death. That was challenged by their own courts, the Kansas Supreme Court, and ultimately went to the United States Supreme Court. And in that decision, which was just made in the last couple of months, the 5-4 majority held that Kansas was correct, that the default position, if mitigating and aggravating circumstances are equal, death is automatic.
And that is a scary precedent because essentially they're saying that if there's a tie, the tie breaks in favor of the permanent solution,
exactly.
Whether you know it is warranted or not.
Exactly. And Justice Souter, in writing in dissent, said this was a position that was morally absurd. And in response to Souter's statement, Souter went on talking mm-hmm. about international concerns and talking about the quite extraordinary harvest we've had recently of these cases of exoneration that you mentioned and these cases now of innocent people having been executed. Scalia went on record as saying that there was no case where it had been proven that an individual had been executed. Well, technically, he's correct. He's correct because we don't have the kind of capacity to overturn the state's reluctance to cooperate in an mm-hmm. investigation like that and mm-hmm. exhume a body and use the DNA capacity to test when DNA can be a determinative mm-hmm. factor. So,
Mike, I got to stop for a break. We'll continue just a moment with Mike Farrell. He's president of Death Penalty Focus. They're on the web, deathpenalty.org. And you can call me at 1-888-5-PETER-B. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
It's Behind the Wheel, the Consumer New Car Review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2006 Kia Sedona, a 7-passenger minivan with 3 rows of seats. With a low price and generous warranties, Kia is getting more competitive with Japanese and American car makers. The Sedona has a 3.8-liter fuel-injected 6-cylinder engine and a 5-speed automatic with average power and acceleration. It passed our grueling hill climb test with no problem. It's roomy inside, and the third seat folds flat for cargo, but wouldn't be comfortable for an all-day trip. My demo has AC and power locks, but it's not loaded with accessories or leather. By the numbers, the 2006 Kia Sedona minivan gets 18 mpg in the city, 25 miles to the gallon on the highway, and stickers in California for about $24,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, meet Mike Serrari of the National Wealth Builders as he talks about the San Francisco Overseas Property Expo, August 4th, 5th, and 6th at the Hilton San Francisco. It's being presented by Live Well Magazine and the National Wealth Builders. If you've ever wanted to know about investing in beautiful locations like Europe, the Caribbean, the Bahamas, and Africa, this is the place to be. Rock Roller Real Estate, heard every Sunday morning at 10. For more information, call 408-892-3376.
I'm tired of all these old TVs and computers trashing our garage. Can't we get rid of them once and for all?
I'd love to, honey, but it costs so much to get rid of them.
This Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you can dispose of your electronic waste, TVs, monitors, old computers, and more, and it won't cost you a dime. Bring them to the Monterey Fairgrounds, and the garage will be yours again. The Electronic Waste Disposal Event is happening this Friday through Sunday, July 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Monterey Fairgrounds in Monterey. Go to noewaste.com for more information. That's noewaste.com.
I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Olson with KRXA 540 traffic. Problem in Scotts Valley, South 17 before Mount Hermon Road. It's some cones in the right lane, cones in an orange sign. South 17 is going to slow from Lark to Highway 9 in Los Gatos. Carmel Valley Road at Prado del Sol. It's a grass fire burning on the hillside above the roadway. Fire department on scene there. Salinas East 156 before Elkhorn Road. Eastbound lane is blocked with a two-car crash there. Also, Carmel Morse Drive at Highway 1. It's a two-car crash. That's on the right shoulder as well. Through September 5th, qualified buyers can get 2.9% financing on an 06 Audi A6 sedan. For information, visit your Bay Area Audi dealers for details. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
The Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. I'm glad you're listening. 22 minutes past the hour. I've got lines open for if you'd like to talk to Mike Farrell about the death penalty. 888-5-PETER-B. That's our new toll-free number. 888-5-PETER-B. Or 888-573-8372 if the digits are easier for you. And coming up after 5:30, we throw it wide open in the free speech zone. You can call about any issue from any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. We continue with Mike Farrell. He's president of Death Penalty Focus. You know him from his work on television and in movies. And, Mike, I also just tip my hat to you for your years of service, one of the sane members of the board of the Screen Actors Guild.
Thank you, sir.
And
a joke that some of us understand.
Are those people acting in there? That's what I want to know. I used to be a member of the national board of the sister union AFTRA that meets across the hall there from you in Los Angeles.
And you heard the screaming.
Yeah, there were some very exciting events going on there.
Sure.
We're joined by Clyde from Santa Cruz. Clyde, thanks for your call. You're on with Peter B. and Mike Farrell.
Hey, hi, thanks.
You bet.
I love your choice of buffer music, too.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I wanted to just, the thing about people were supposedly innocent until proven guilty. And one of the things that I find is you see this across the board in our culture. Like, you'll see, like, when they're describing a war situation, they'll talk about women and children being killed. And men, a lot of times, they're like, you know, cannon fodder. And I think that, coupled with the thing you're talking about with the death penalty, is, like, it dehumanizes us. And one of the things that I use whenever I'm talking to people about the death penalty, and I ask them to seriously consider this, if the government executes somebody as your proxy, you're the person that they're doing it for you as a citizen of that state, and you find out that person is innocent, would you be willing to put yourself up to be executed because you have executed an innocent person? And people go, oh, I haven't thought of it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out there for...
All right. Mike, do you have a comment?
It's interesting. I could barely hear the caller, but I think I got the gist of it, and it's an interesting point to make. The flip side of that is one that was made to me by a very rabid supporter of the death penalty on a debate we had on the Larry King Show during the Stanley Tookie Williams execution, in which he said every supporter of the death penalty should be willing to push the button himself, and I, he said, would be willing to do that. It's an interesting point, not one I agree with, obviously, and I found him to be quite, as I suggested, rabid. But But it's an interesting question for people to ask. You're quite right, caller, that they are doing it in our name, and we, therefore, must take the responsibility for what happens.
Yeah. Clyde, thank you very much for a thoughtful call today. I appreciate that. Now, Mike, you recently penned an open letter to the man who will probably be the next Attorney General of California, our former Governor Moonbeam, Jerry Brown, who is now the mayor of Oakland.
Right.
And it's interesting, Jerry Brown is a former seminarian, and as governor, I don't believe he had to confront this because the death penalty was not active. The Supreme Court had not reinstated it.
That's right.
And so he comes forward now as a man who we believe is personally opposed to capital punishment, but he has stated for the record in his campaign that he will observe the law. And we know that the Attorney General acts as the state's counsel and essentially is the advocate to kill a condemned inmate. So how is he going to square his personal views with his political statements and his elective responsibilities?
Well, that's a question, of course, you'd have to ask Jerry. When we had our conversation that preceded my letter, I raised that issue with him, obviously, as I have any number of times in the past. And he... He simply took the position that said, look, they're going to come after me because they know I've opposed the death penalty in the past, and I just want to make sure that it's clear that as the chief law enforcement officer of the state of California, I will recognize in my duty and do it. So in my conversation with him and in more thoughtful way, hopefully, in this letter to him, I have raised some issues that it seems to me ought to be forefront in his consideration. I don't frankly know how one who believes what Jerry has said in the past that he believes can conceivably go forward in terms of facilitating the taking of a life of an individual, but he claims he can do it.
Well, he is how can I put it? He's a mercurial guy,
yeah.
Often hard to pigeonhole. And as mayor of Oakland, he's posed as tough on crime, and he's called for crackdowns on parolees. So he has morphed. It's just hard to know where the morphing will end.
That's always the case with some of these guys who have committed themselves to a life of what we like to think of as public service, but in fact, more often than not, it's sort of self-service.
Well, at his age, yeah, to keep running, he's got a huge pension already piled up from his 8 years as governor, 8 years as secretary of state, and whatever Oakland pays him for 8 years there.
Yeah.
But he just seems unable to relax or retire.
I guess that's the case. I don't know. He's an interesting character, always has been. But
mm-hmm.
I found some of his positions when we were on the radio show that I cited in the letter you mentioned, so incredibly thoughtful and heartfelt and well-intended. And then to have it all turn around, as you've suggested, and become this arch opponent of criminality is a little hard to...
Well, and he joined Schwarzenegger in the effort to kill the reform to the three strikes law, and I just find that demagoguery pure and simple.
I agree.
Yeah. Mike Farrell, thanks for your work. Great to talk with you today, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Peter. Always a pleasure.
Mike Farrell, go to the website deathpenalty.org and read more. We'll continue and take your calls next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Monta Vista Wine and Spirits in Monterey has everything you need, from high-end liquor to the very best in fine wines. It's the real deal. Family-owned for over 40 years, John will give you one-on-one personal attention, just like family. Have a special request? Not a problem. Open every day from 9 to 9. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is located on Soledad Drive in Monta Vista Village, near the Del Monte Center. Look for Doug Huckleberry, who greets you at the door. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits wants you to please drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts.
offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, host of the Tasty Planet radio show. Every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and fun. I interview authors, winemakers, chefs, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make the Monterey Bay Area such a delicious slice of our tasty planet. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Sponsored in part by Kitchen Studio.
Minutes after the hour, the Peter B. Collins Show continues. I am your humble host, Peter B., and we are now knee-deep in the free speech zone. Your calls and comments are welcome on any subject, from any viewpoint, from anywhere in the sound of my voice. A lot of people wanted to talk about the $1 million reward for voting in Arizona who didn't get on last hour. You can call us now. Maybe you want to react to Mike Farrell's remarks about the death penalty. I invite your call. Or perhaps you'd like to talk about how to lose money on eBay. Interesting conversation with Ken Walton earlier today. It's all up for grabs. Give me a call.
Ain't no technological breakdown. Oh, no, this is the road.
All my lines are open right now, and it's a toll-free call at our brand-new number. Have you got it? 888-5-PETER-B. That's 1-888, the number 5, and then spell out Peter B. Or use the digits, 888-573-8372. And our Eureka listeners are not available this half hour because they're listening to a baseball game. So that puts it on you, Santa Cruz, Monterey, Salinas, Carmel by the Sea. I'd like to hear from you this afternoon. And if you're a first-time caller, we've got one more copy of Scott Ritter's book, Iraq Confidential, that we'll be happy to pass along to somebody who calls and just says, oh,
I'd like to read that book. So again, my number is 888-5-PETER-B, and I'd like to hear from you in the Free Speech Zone this half hour. And as I mentioned, I'm not sure if I'm going to be here tomorrow. As my civic duty has been defined for me, I've been called for jury duty. I report at 9:30 in the morning, and it's uncertain whether I'll be selected for a panel or processed or exactly what's going to happen. So we'll play it by ear. And my super producer, Matt Renner, is standing by. He will sit in for me tomorrow if I am sent into the jury room and they don't let me out. So if that happens, don't expect or don't speculate about anything sinister. It's just Peter B. being a citizen. And I have to tell you, I have mixed feelings, because if it weren't for the radio show here that I do every day that's so important to me and I hope is important to you, I would gladly serve on a jury. And, you know, I have these mixed feelings because I want to be here tomorrow and every day to do this radio show. On the other hand, I have never sat on a jury, and I'm curious about the process. As you've heard in my discussions with Mike Farrell and perhaps on other occasions, I feel strongly about our criminal justice system and that there are many ways in which it fails us. And so if I have the opportunity, like I say, I would like to serve, and I'm not sure a judge would excuse me simply because I host a daily radio show. So if I disappear tomorrow and don't come back for a while, it means that I was picked and will be doing my duty. So perhaps you've served on a jury. Maybe you want to talk about that. Tell us what your experience was like. Tell me what I'm going to face tomorrow. I know I report at 9:30. I've been told not to wear shorts, even though it's really hot. And I'll bring all my newspapers and a couple of books and just see how the process unravels. But as I say, I have those mixed feelings. I would really like to participate in a jury process. And, well, we're just going to have to see how it turns out. As you may know, last week we observed our first anniversary here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And I am delighted that you and so many other people have discovered us and listen on a regular basis. So we would like to celebrate with you. We're giving away a case of fine Central Coast wine from select vintners in Monterey County in the Santa Cruz Mountains. These come in 750-milliliter bottles with corks or other stoppers in them. No boxes involved, I can guarantee you that. And the good wines are courtesy of our friends at the Monterey Bay Wine Company. If you'd like to enter, there's still time. We'll be doing it through the end of this week. Drop an email to me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Include your name, address, a daytime phone. Indicate you're at least 21 so they don't come and take me away for that. And tell me your most memorable moment of the Peter B. Collins Show over the past year. One entry per person, please. And if you don't have email, you can put it in the Postal Service. Send it to me at my post office box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. That's box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. We'll hold the drawing and announce the winner coming up on August 1st. Let's go to line one, and we've got Steve in Salinas. Good afternoon, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon. I called earlier when you had your lawyer on there about the Busby thing in San Diego, and I had another thought.
Sure.
Would it be possible for the Attorney General of California to get involved in here, especially the Michael Haas thing? Seems like this guy should be held responsible for letting those machines go home.
Mm-hmm.
So could the Attorney General from California investigate that?
I think you have a very solid point. I believe that the state would have jurisdiction because even though it was a congressional election, it was conducted under the state's election rules and procedures. And the recount, it's not quite a recount. They're asking for a hand count in District 50. And I believe that falls under the state constitution, state laws, and the procedures of the Secretary of State. So I believe there is a cause of action there, or at least the basis for an investigation. You've given me some food for thought here, Steve. I know the Attorney General, the current one, Bill Lockyer, and I'll see if I can put in a call between jury duty tomorrow. And see if I can invite him on the program to discuss just that, because I don't know exactly how much he's aware of the issues or whether his agency has entered this fray at this point or not.
It seems like Michael Haas seems to me that he broke the law by letting those folks take the machines home, and he should be held accountable for that.
Well, I believe you're correct. Breaking the law might be a little strong. What he actually violated was the protocols which were issued by the Secretary of State to the various county registrars and other officials. In some counties, it's a combined job. But the memo went out, I believe, in late March from Bruce McPherson's office in Sacramento, and it did have, at least I've never read this myself, but I am told that it contained these rules for the security of the machines, including the seals, the little sticky label seals that were supposed to be placed to make sure that the memory cards and other internal parts of these voting machines were not tampered with.
Okay, thank you.
But, of course, they could be, you know, the seal could be intact, and a memory card may not have been physically tampered with, but it could have been altered electronically. And that's another area of concern that we have, because many of the Diebold machines, I believe it's the DREs, the touchscreen voting machines, we've been told by some critics they could be manipulated by somebody with a BlackBerry who's parked across the street from the precinct where the voting machine is located.
I wasn't there. Never mind.
I get it.
Okay.
Thank you, Steve. That leaves a line open for you, 888-5-PETER-B. Give us a call. Let us know what's on your mind. Next, we go to Peter V. in Monterey. Hello, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Collins.
How are you doing today?
Good, thank you. I'm staying on that coastal cool zone that we all pay so much for here.
Oh, good. Yeah, and, it's finally cooling off in the Bay Area, too, just a little bit.
Oh, my. Well, the traffic isn't cooling down. Anyway, Peter, I would like to make a comment on the G8, if I might.
Okay.
I think it's important for our listeners to know the character of the G8, and that would be greedy, global gas-guzzling gang of garbage-producing, gold-grabbing, gluttonous, governmental grifters, glibly extolling gunboat, grave-digging gospel for ungodly profits.
You are demonstrating adult illiteracy.
I just thought during these troubling of times that our illustrious leaders all were able to get together and discuss nothing.
Now, do you believe we should send a note of condolence to Russia because it has not been accepted into the WTO? Or should we send them a note of congratulation?
I believe Mr. Putin is absolutely basking in this $80 a barrel oil.
Yes.
He's got 70% approval within his own country. He's got the oligarchs in the Khodorkovsky canary cage.
Right.
It looks like they're raising statues of Stalin again.
Are they?
I'm just exaggerating here. I'm sorry.
I missed that one.
It's the rise of the nationalism again. All brought to us by the man who, our leader again, looked into his soul and said, I could see Khrushchev?
Yeah. I don't think he saw Jesus.
No. Well, Peter, I want to congratulate you again on bringing us an absolutely spectacular year. And I would like to vocally say that Shelley Phelps was my favorite show that you had this year.
Shelley Phelps.
That's the Reverend Phelps's...
Oh,
princess.
Right. Fred Phelps' daughter.
Yes.
Oh, thank
yes.
you. Yeah. Well, we have to credit Scott Dick for that, because it was Scott who brought the whole story to my attention, that Fred Phelps, he's this wacko, right-wing, evangelical nut, a pastor from Topeka, Kansas, and he's the one who sends his minions out to demonstrate at the funerals of men and women who've died in Iraq. And he makes this bizarre connection, which is in quotes, that because somebody tried to use an improvised bomb on Fred Phelps, that the IEDs being used against American troops in Iraq are God's retribution for the attempts to kill Fred Phelps. And, of course, that's all tied to his vilification of gays in this country, because he runs the website GodHatesFags.com. So,
well, he's a perfect player in this current catastrophe we've got playing out. He's part of the evangelicals praying on the sidelines for this all to spiral into the rapture. And, Peter, again, I appreciate you bringing all the sanity and the bravery it took to bring that woman on. I mean, it was riveting radio. And, again, keep up the good work, Peter. I'm going to let some other people come on.
Thank you, Peter. Always a pleasure to hear from you. And you can alliterate all you want. He's a clever guy. Time for a quick break, and then we return to your phone calls. We're in the Free Speech Zone. This is a Central Coast special because the North Coast is listening to a baseball game today. So lines are open for you, Watsonville, Castroville, Salinas, Santa Cruz, Monterey, Aptos. I haven't forgotten Soquel either. You can call me, 888-5-PETER-B, and if you want a copy of Scott Ritter's book, just say so. We'll send it to you. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. Here at the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
The Monterey County Democrats invite all KRXA listeners to join them this Saturday from noon to 3 at the Democratic Reunion and Voter Registration Drive Kickoff Picnic. The drive and picnic will take place at Natividad Creek Park, 1395 Nogal Drive in Salinas. This is a unique opportunity to meet with your elected leaders, candidates, and special guests in a casual setting while enjoying free food and fun. RSVP to 1-866-679-3367 or browse to www.democrats.org.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Good afternoon. I'm Larry Olson. We'll start with delays on 17 southbound from Lark to Highway 9 in Los Gatos. So a little bit of slowness as you make your way in through the Santa Cruz Mountains. Carmel Morse Drive at Highway 1, an accident to the right shoulder. A couple of cars involved. This has been here for about 40 minutes now. That's Morse Drive at Highway 1. Watsonville, San Miguel Canyon at Strawberry Canyon Road. An accident, a car went off the roadway and landed in a creek. CHP en route, that's San Miguel Canyon Road at Strawberry Canyon Road in Watsonville. Car ran off the roadway there. Do have some debris in lanes 152, just east of Dinosaur Point, some debris clearing out of lanes. The home of your dreams at a price you never dreamed possible. Mossdale Landing, 8 builders, 40 home plans, and 34 model homes in Lathrop's first master plan community. Visit MossdaleLanding.com. I'm Larry Olson with traffic on KRXA 540.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show in the home stretch here, and the Free Speech Zone is in full effect. I'm waiting for your call from Soquel this afternoon. I just want to make sure everything's okay over there. 888-5-PETER-B is my phone number. You got that? It's the new number, toll-free, 888-573-8372, 888-5-PETER-B. And Steve's on the line from Watsonville. Hi, Steve. It's Peter B.
Thanks, Peter. Now, is that Arcata or Humboldt County that you'll be doing jury in?
No, I will be serving in Marin County. That's where
I
live.
Well, 6 1/2 dozen of the other, the same basic issue. I was called for Santa Cruz County, and I just thought I'd share what I did to deal with the problem.
All right, tell me.
Let's see, it was a DEA spy trying to hang some Colombian national for drug sales.
I see.
In the Santa Cruz, within the jurisdiction of the city of Santa Cruz, where, you know, properly speaking, it should have been Santa Cruz PD, you know, doing the bus, but no, it's DEA.
Okay.
So they went to jury trial, got a Colombian, right?
Yeah.
The defense and the prosecutor both interviewed all the jurors. I simply stated that I thought cocaine was a monopoly of the pharmaceutical and medical establishments.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my personal opinion, right?
Yeah.
Neither one wanted me on the jury.
Well, I would believe, and I will certainly be honest in response to any questions that I'm asked, that my politics would be seen as inconvenient to the prosecutor. I have worked tirelessly for many years now on behalf of people who have been falsely accused and
right.
on behalf of people who are trapped in the state parole system who should have been released in many cases 10 or 12 years ago. And so
why are you on their jury?
I think if I describe that, they will probably say no, thank you. But do you share my mixed feelings? I mean, I would like to be on a jury because I'd like somebody who thinks like me to be there in the event that they try to falsely accuse or falsely convict somebody.
Give me that Richard Allen Davis case. You know, I'll sit on that sucker.
God, I wouldn't want to sit on that one.
I wouldn't want to have to endure the testimony. You got that right.
Yeah. And nobody in that case looked good. You know, Mark Class turned into a kind of professional victim. I do respect his father, Joe, and Mark to some extent because they realized that they had been used by the proponents of the three strikes ballot measure. And they
got that right. Amen, amen, amen.
And they did back away from it. But, you know, it really was a tawdry case, and the way the media hyped it just was so uncomfortable, you know?
To say the least.
Yeah. By the way, Richard Davis overdosed at San Quentin over the weekend. He's still alive, but he overdosed and I guess was taken to the infirmary for a while.
Maybe he had the same attorney, defense attorney as Slobodan Milosevic.
I don't know about that. Thank you, Steve.
Yeah.
Nice to hear from you. Next, we got Billy in Capitola, California. Hello, Billy.
Well, we're close to SoCal, my friend.
Yes, you are.
Yes.
And take a look out. Is SoCal okay?
Yeah, SoCal's doing just fine.
Good, good. Has it cooled down in Capitola a little bit?
You know, it's never been hot enough for me to want to turn on my air conditioner.
Oh, really?
Oh, it's been great here. This is, like the most microclimate in the world. I think it's a, 10-block radius where the weather is just perfect.
Well, I'm glad to hear that because we got really fried up here, and I just got my computer back after 3 days in the shop. It survived. But the hard drive was kind of like a pancake.
Oh, geez. And they say global warming is just something we made up. Thanks a lot, Exxon.
Oh, you bet. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's based on fuzzy science.
Yeah. So, this jury thing.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I have with sitting on a jury is they don't let you have all the information. They don't let you ask questions directly to the people.
Right.
Like that, you know what happened with that Ed Rosenthal in Oakland?
Yeah.
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 That's a real good example of
the medical marijuana guy.
Be on.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand. It is very difficult because, the way they treat the jury, you're not even supposed to discuss the case until you get into the deliberation phase. And so for whatever the length of the trial is, you're basically just passively absorbing the theatrics, taking a few notes. You're not supposed to talk to anybody about it. And so it is a challenging process there. And as you pointed out, we, as jury members, get presented with very skewed and narrowed versions of the events that took place.
That ain't justice, my friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever done it?
I've never actually been called. I've sat there and been lucky enough to not have to sit.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been called. I've gotten a notice four times. I've only had to show up once. It was a federal case in district court in Oakland. And the interesting thing is the federal juries get paid $45 a day.
Ooh.
I think it's still $15 for a county jury. Which doesn't even pay for lunch and the gas it takes to get there.
Really? I was a professional, a guy who testifies professionally once.
Oh, a professional witness?
Yeah. And so they asked me, the lawyer who called and wanted to use me, he said, well, how much do you get? I said, I'll charge whatever you charge per hour.
And did he accept that?
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah.
Huh. And what are you an expert on, Billy?
At the time, I was an expert on real estate and what it cost to rent a certain kind of place. It was an issue in a divorce about her wanting to keep her lifestyle at a certain level, so I had to go out and look at her house, check it out, and, you know, I got to charge him for all of that.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, Billy, you're going to start your own talk show on KRXA coming up in just a few weeks.
Yeah, I know, but that means I'm not eligible to win the wine, doesn't it?
I didn't put a line in there about employees and people who hang out at the radio station are not eligible, so...
Well, there you go.
You're in the clear.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. You've been a great role model, and I'm going to try not to steal any of your guests.
Ah, feel free.
Oh, thank you, my friend.
You know, and we have no proprietary control because we don't pay any of these people, so...
I bet you're not getting paid that much either.
Someday.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, someday. All right, Billy, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye, friend.
Good to talk to you. One final note. We mentioned on the program the other day that a courageous judge named Vaughn Walker, who sits on the Federal District Court in San Francisco, ruled against the U.S. government, claiming that he would not dismiss the case over the NSA spying program that was facilitated by AT&T at their San Francisco switch. We believe, but don't know, that that facility was used to intercept telephone communications and emails. And Judge Walker ruled that the government has opened the door for judicial inquiry by publicly confirming and denying material information about the monitoring of communications content. But in a parallel case regarding the data mining of telephone records, which was facilitated by AT&T and most other major telephone companies, the judge in Chicago dismissed a class action suit against AT&T about the data mining because he said that based on the state secret privilege, he had to bar the suit because it could disclose information harmful to national security. And the judge, Matthew Canelli, said the Chicago case concerns records of phone calls, including when they were placed, how long they lasted, and the phone numbers involved. The San Francisco case, by contrast, mainly concerns an NSA program aimed not at a vast sweep of customers' records, but at the contents of a more limited number of communications. Judge Canelli, I don't get it. Because if a less sweeping program was not dismissed from Vaughn Walker's court in San Francisco, how can a massive program that is clearly not based on probable cause, which is guaranteed to us in the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, how can that case be dismissed? I just don't get it. And I hope that the Vaughn Walker case will go forward in a manner which brings us some satisfaction. And I also hope that that crazy guy from Pennsylvania, Senator Arlen Specter, will sue the government over its handling of these secrecy matters. I may be here tomorrow. I may be in jury duty tomorrow. Tune in and find out. I'm Peter B. Collins. Thanks for listening. Trigger, let's take a ride.
Happy trails to you. Until we meet again.
parents.
Do you need cash for college? This year, more than $100 billion is available for financial aid. Let AboutCollegeFunding.com help you navigate the complicated process to accessing your share of these funds. AboutCollegeFunding.com is now offering free one-hour consultations for parents in need of answers. To schedule your free one-hour consultation with RJ Moyet, call 1-888-337-9775. That's 1-888-337-9775.
Remember, the early bird gets the cash.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale with great news. I have a new time slot. Reality Radio can be heard every Saturday afternoon now from 4 to 5. So keep it right here, AM 540, for extraordinary progressive talk. With me, Sheila Gale, number one in Reality Radio. There's nothing we won't talk about. Saturdays, 4 to 5 p.m., sponsored in part by Primerica Financial Services. Call Joe and Phyllis at the Marina office for your free consultation. See you Saturday on KRXA.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. International leaders failed to come up with a ceasefire plan, and the Mideast conflict grew deadlier. 9 Israeli soldiers were killed today in ground battles with Hezbollah guerrillas in South Lebanon.
We never assumed, never thought for a second that it was going to be easy war. Hezbollah is not a ragtag terrorist force, it's a terrorist army. We are encountering the type of resistance we expected.
Israeli Defense Force spokesman Michael Oren and now Israeli commanders say the fighting could last several more weeks. Stranded Americans tried to make it out today. It was very dangerous. CBS News correspondent Lee Cowan found out as he traveled with them.
This is what passes for the cavalry these days in southern Lebanon. A convoy of Americans in rusted out Mercedes, minibuses, and taxi cabs, all out to rescue other stranded Americans at the border. But getting to them meant getting a deal from Israel to allow a safe passage. At best, the window would be brief. Israel's bombing campaign hasn't let up a bit.
This young American made it out safely, but with regrets.
I'm happy to be going back to America, but what's not nice about it is part of my family is here, so we're going to leave them and go to America. So that's bad about it.
Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki appeared before Congress today, promising to be a partner with the U.S. in the fight against terror.
Maliki said his country will prevail and said Iraq and the U.S. are allies. Their struggle against terrorism, he told Congress through an interpreter, is tied together.
Iraq and America both need each other to defeat the terror.
Democratic Senator Dick Durbin says Americans want to hear a different message from Iraq.
To be willing to stand and fight to defend their own country so American soldiers can start coming home.
While Maliki said his battle is with terrorists, Durbin says the facts on the ground show Iraq is actually being dragged into civil war. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Saddam Hussein was back in court today after his hunger strike. He brought his own lunch, but not his attorneys, who were still boycotting the proceedings.
In court, Saddam Hussein was very defiant. He questioned the authority of the court, suggesting it was just an American-led farce. At one point, he urged Iraqis not to kill each other, to kill Americans instead. And again, he says if he gets the death penalty, he wants to be shot because he's a soldier and not hanged as though he were just a civilian.
CBS News correspondent Mark Strassman in Baghdad. A jury in Houston today found Andrea Yates not guilty by reason of insanity in the drowning deaths of her young children. CBS